Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh, sounds good to me. It's interesting. Before we get on the air, and I'm so blasé about this now. It's like, I'm listening to my countdown. Okay, fine. And it's like, oh, there's the music. And, oh, I'm done. It's kind of crazy. That's how that works. Anyway, no, we get this nice British voice. Your show will begin in 5 seconds. And it's like, oh, well, I guess it's time to do the showtime. Anyway, it looks like I've got Ellen on the line right now. So we have Alyssa's in the program as occasional visits from Ellen Dawson in Brazil. Sorry, Ellen. Belize. I'm not awake yet. Give me a chance. Because I never know exactly when he's going to call in. So let's give this a shot and see if this is the one and only Ellen Dawson, my tour guide friend. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Greg. Good morning.
There he is.
On the radio.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't hear you for a second. I had to see. Sometimes you know it comes through as your number, and sometimes it comes through as the blank, you know, the Skype line number. So it's Jean's not producing for a while. She's taking a couple month break. So normally she, you know, hop on the line first and check it out. But I'm sort of doing the solo thing these days, and so it's a little bit. It's like, oh, good, glad you. That's good. So how are you feeling? What's going on? What's happening down there?
Well, you know, I'm feeling much better compared to earlier in the week.
Yeah. Should we tell everybody what's going on?
Say again?
Should we tell everybody what's going on, or do you want to off on that? Up to you.
No, go ahead.
Okay, well, as we all know, Omicron's going around the world. I think I had it. I'm guessing you had it too. And so as this worldwide virus goes everywhere, with me, I think I either had a cold or I had a 5-day Omicron, and I'm not sure which, because they don't test you after you don't have symptoms. And I figured I don't want to go in and get tested while I have symptoms, because if I have symptoms, other people might get sick. So I didn't do that. But anyway, that's my suspicion, is that I had an Omicron about 3, maybe 4 weeks ago now. And so it looks like, you had a bit of it yourself, and, you know, and now it's gone. How long did it last with you? Like about 4 or 5 days, same thing, or
I started Sunday night. I started like Sunday night with the throat issues, you know, scratchy throat, irritated throat. So my first thing, like I would always do over the years, just gargle with some hydrogen peroxide or some hot water with salt, you know. And I felt good. I slept good Sunday night. Then I woke up with fever Monday morning and all the body aches and headaches and all the things that comes with the flu. So I figured, oh, well, this might be a flu. I might have gotten something with the COVID. So I figured, oh, it's Omicron. So
that makes sense.
I waited and I got a test on Wednesday. It's positive for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm home for 10 days and doing my usual home remedies. I got they gave you a little package of medication, right? The only two I'm taking from the 5 they gave me is the ivermectin and the zinc. That's the only 2 I'm taking.
So now this is really good news, because is this from the Belize government, the tourist bureau, or is this from your regular doctor or the hospital, or where's the medication coming from?
The actual testing site. This testing site, once you test positive, they give you a little package and they say, go home and drink this.
Now that's fascinating. So they're actually giving you ivermectin, this is really good news. And this is why I love having you on here. So anybody wants to call in and talk to Alan, feel free. So Alan's in the Skype line. He's in Belize right now. I guess you live just outside Belize City. He's a tour guide there. He's my friend. We've been chatting for years off and on, too many years off, actually, because we've had busy lives. And now that I got this radio show with a Skype line, we finally got working. I mean, Alan's calling in. In fact, Alan, you're going to be really interested to know this, too, that I'm going to be working. I'm starting to work right now, actually, with activists in Australia, in New Zealand, and Israel. And, of course, with the Skype line, they'll be able to call in, too. And what's fascinating about this is they want to do, you know, what I want to do here, which is take away the power of the government to issue these ridiculous mandates. And so we're going worldwide. It's only a matter of time before, you know, folks are calling in on the Skype line all the time. So I need my producer back. I need help. It's going to get really busy here. And it's like, I can't, the only thing I really can't do is screen calls, because I can't take the time out of the air to do that. Cause I got the show to do. So
you
anyway.
You can't what with calls?
Well, so we have a call screening device here. And so when I have a
Florida and help monitor that for you,
you could actually produce the show from there. I could give you all
look
the,
at that.
The I could, yeah, I could give you the secret passwords, the secret handshake, you know, the codes and all that kind of stuff. And you could be my producer. And I don't know if you want, you got 3 hours a day. I don't know if you got the time for this.
No, Greg, I'm too busy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah, most people are.
Yeah, buddy. I wish I could.
Oh, I know, and it'd be fun to talk to you every day. But what's going to happen is this show's going to get really big. Now, at some point, I'll have a staff. I mean, this is going to be an actual, you know, real corporation with real employees, and then, of course, people will have the time because they're going to get paid for their time. So that's going to happen. It's just a question of when and how big, and, you know, as we grow here with Action Radio. But anyway, what I find interesting, so now the testing site that you went to, is it a government test? Is it a hospital, a private testing center? Who's doing it?
The government set them up in strategic locations around the city.
Okay.
So where I used to live in Ladyville, which is close to the airport, they have a clinic out there too, and they have testing site there too, and they do vaccines. The clinic was actually right across the street from where I used to live.
But, oh, interesting.
I went down to the city because I think they were going to start doing testing 1 o'clock, and then I left home like about 9:30. I wanted to get it over with and get back home, you know.
Yeah,
so that's why I went
to
the city. I went to the city, but there were like about 26 people ahead of me, and you know, within like an hour, I was all tested and got my result and walking out of there.
Yeah,
but now, I thought this was interesting, Greg.
Uh-huh.
This is interesting. Like 3 weeks ago, we were down to like 400 cases of COVID in Belize, and check this out. We're now at over 7,000 cases.
Yeah, but it's Omicron. It's no big deal. It's a
cold. Omicron.
Well, so, now here's what's fascinating. Go ahead. Finish. I always think of like too many things to say. I want to leap in too quickly. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just reading this is the headline news that I'm looking at here. It says, 940 new cases of COVID-19 has been reported in the last 24 hours, pushing Belize's active case to 7,105, with nearly 40,000 confirmed cases since the start of the pandemic. Nearly 10% of Belizeans tested were positive for COVID-19.
How many of those were vaccinated?
Vaccinated right now, we are, I think, just a little over half the population is vaccinated.
Okay, so here's the nasty question. How many of the new Omicron cases are vaccinated? Or percentage? Is there any stats on that in the article?
No, I don't see. I was looking for that.
Yeah, you know why?
That, but it's not there.
and that's the thing. There's a British study, and I was just watching One American News before I came on the air, and they've got a guy who filed an amicus brief, which is amicus is I guess Latin for friend, and it's a friend of the court brief, amiable, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so that's where the word comes from, and what he was saying is that Omicron actually acts like a vaccine. Because it's going around the world like crazy. I think I had it. It was 5 days. And I have my quercetin, which is like hydroxychloroquine, my zinc, my vitamin D3, my vitamin C. And so that's what I don't take it every day. I probably should, but, I feel pretty good. So I get a little lax. But anyway, the point being, that's what I have. That's my preventive. And that works. That's the Dr. Zelenko, you know, formula, basically. It's interesting that, and for ivermectin, same thing. Now, here's the thing. Now, the Belize government is able to give out ivermectin, but the American government won't let that happen. So our fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic drug pusher, Dr. Anthony Fauci, has issued guidelines that you can't use ivermectin in this country because it's a horse dewormer, and all this other nonsense, and they're saying all these terrible things. And you just proved that it worked, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm drinking my second dose today. It's just two they give you. You drink like two on the first day, and then on the third day you drink the other two. So I'm drinking the second dose today.
There you go.
I talked with a nephew. I have a nephew in Chicago. He called me yesterday. He said, "Oh, I heard you have COVID, blah, blah, blah. What are you drinking?" I said, "Well, I'm drinking my ivermectin." "What? You're drinking ivermectin? That thing is banned here. That's horse dewormer."
Yeah, that's the propaganda. Well. And, well, in the form that's given to horses, yes, it is. You know, but it also cures river blindness and parasites, and it does all kinds of good things. It's basically a parasite, and the viruses are parasites. It's a parasite remover. And so in that respect, yes, but you're getting the one for people, not the one made for horses, you know, because you're not a horse.
Exactly.
You know, and this is people don't understand, but they don't figure that out here. They think, well, why would a drug company make something for horses and give it to people? That's just irrational. That's stupid. That's dumb.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do that. And they don't make the logical leap that, well, gee, there must be a version for people, you know, but but that's what we're facing here. This is the propaganda we're facing. And of course, you know, I'm trying to get out the message, and, you know, some of the big doctors now, Dr. McCullough, Dr. Malone, the folks that are on like Joe Rogan's podcast, he's got 60 million people, which is a few more than I have. And so he's out there, they're out there talking about this. And here's the Belize government. Now, is the Belize government getting any objections from Pfizer? Cause they want to push their vax shot, which, you know, for Omicron is totally unnecessary. But are they giving you guys any trouble down there for giving out ivermectin?
No, not at all.
So you're still under the radar. That's what it is. Or they don't care.
Probably. You know, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Yeah,
well,
this is all right. Yeah, go ahead.
I think we have a few cancellations from the cruise ship for the month of January and February. I think Royal Caribbean canceled two of their cruises. I guess because of the rapid increase in this thing, I guess. But
well, the Omicold?
Carnival is still coming.
Okay, that's good. I call it the Omicold.
You know what I call it?
What do you call it?
Oh, my crun. Oh, my. It's the new oh, my crun.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah, because this is such a nothing thing. I mean, you know, it's like a cold, and we don't stop cruise ships for colds. We don't stop schools for colds. You know, it's basically the same strength as a cold. You know, 5 days, scratchy throat, stuffy nose,
pretty much,
little headache.
Yeah,
and that's what we call a cold. So, and the thing is, colds are coronavirus, just like COVID's a coronavirus. It's the same family virus.
Right.
You know, so this is why this is so funny. Yeah. But the government response is where all the problem is. It's not the virus itself. I mean, if you're old and you get a very strong version of this, you know, be the same thing as flu. I mean, it can be a life-ending event, you know, or if you have what they call comorbidities. But for most people, you know, unless you're like really old or really susceptible, you know, it's going to be the Delta was a lot stronger. The Alpha, the one I think I had back in 2020, exactly 2 years ago. You know, this would have been the last week of my original COVID 2 years ago. We didn't even know what it was then. It was just like this thing that kept me coughing all night long. It was like, what the hell's going on here? You listen to my shows 2 years ago. It's hysterical. I sound awful. And I didn't know what it was. It was like a cough I'd never had before. And I didn't have a fever, which is one of the telltale signs of COVID. But I had the worst cough in the world. I had everything else. And I think I still had my taste and smell. I can't remember, though. I don't remember losing it. Anyway,
did you treat it like you would normally treat a flu though?
Yeah, fluids, rest, chicken soup, you know, the good stuff. I just took it easy for
there
a couple
you
of
go.
Days, and I was fine.
Yeah,
you know, because I was working with it, and because you know at that job at that time didn't have sick days, and I talked to the boss about it. I said, you know what? Because everybody was getting it, everybody was getting sick. I said, all we're doing is passing this back and forth. I said, if you have sick days, allow people to go home for a couple of days and get rid of it. You can stop whatever this bug is. And we didn't even know what it was, you know. And, of course, the boss wasn't too thrilled with that idea. He liked people working, you know. And then they told me to get a doctor. Then they told me to get a doctor's note. It's like, folks, I'm over 60 years old. I know when I'm sick. I'm not going to go get a doctor's note. I'm not like a high school kid. Give me a break. It was pretty cool. Yeah. Anyway, but your government's very progressive doing ivermectin. And they've realized that this is a cost-effective, very rapid way to take a cold and knock it out of people's systems really quickly and get everybody back to work. And so this is, I wish they do that on the cruise ships, you know, take your ivermectin. In other words, if you didn't have to have the jab, if you could just take, you know, a preventive, regular amount of ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine and say, look, this is my vaccine. My preventive is my vaccine. And it's more effective than the actual vaccines. Well, has anybody proposed that to the police government? What do you think?
Natural immunity. That's the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got you connected. I'm hoping that you and Chancey Terry, who is our wine, weed, and wellness Wednesday person, and we talk about preventives all the time. And so I think it'd be interesting if you guys, if you want to call in on her report, she's on Wednesdays, 8 o'clock Central Time. Might be a bit late. You might be busy. You might be working by then. But you guys can talk off the air and exchange, you know, remedies. I think it'd be fascinating. Yeah.
I'll be off for the next week, so till next Friday, quarantine day is done, and then the following Monday I get to do my clear test to make sure I'm clear of COVID before I start a cruise tour again the following week. I think that will be after the 23rd.
Okay. Now, how accurate are your tests? We had a very special guest, Lab Tech X, who was anonymous for reasons to protect, you know, her identity, obviously, but was talking about the tests are not that accurate. They're still experimental, and there's just a ton of false positives. And I'd hate you to not be able to go back to work because you got a false positive in your test.
You know what? For the most part, I don't know which one they're using. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just doing the regular swabbing, but it seems to be pretty, you know, effective. Yes,
okay.
I agree with you that you will have false positive. I'm sure of that. I mean, these things are not accurate, but I think for the most part, they're pretty good.
Yeah. So did you
I'm
ever go back
to get a positive by the time I go back and recheck? And if not,
well, you mean a negative. that's what I'm hoping to get too. I want you back at work so you can do what you do best. But here's the thing, though. Go ahead.
No, I just said yes to that. I said, I hope I get a negative so I can get back to work. I need to get back on the microphone, Greg.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're on the microphone now. You're talking to a whole bunch of people. And so
I don't do well if I'm not on the microphone.
Yeah. it is kind of addictive, isn't it? Once you get the microphone lifestyle, it's really hard to give up. You know, like I say, when I was a tour guide, you know, which was great practice for doing radio. I had a live audience and we got instant feedback. The problem with radio is you don't get the feedback, you know, until you see the charts, the numbers, the graphs, and all the things afterwards. And it's nice, but it's not the same as having a live audience. So we're going to have to do some live audience stuff. It'd be nice to get we'll get a studio audience down in Belize. I still want to come down there, but we got to get do you still have mask mandates or are those pretty much gone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you still got to use your mask here, buddy. I mean, you take that mask off, you're looking at that $250 fine.
And we know the masks don't work, right? We do know that. This is all a joke.
Well, you know what? I think it's because I wasn't wearing it why I got this thing, okay?
I would tend to doubt that, and the reason I do is because the size of a virus is so tiny. This is what our Lab Tech X explained to us, that the virus is so small that if you have any gap in that mask, it's going to go around it, and the fibers are way bigger. The gaps in the fibers are so much bigger, even those little blue masks everybody wears, are so much bigger. The viruses go right through that. I mean, the virus doesn't care. And so it just comes in and out of the air that you breathe in and out through it. What? You don't believe me? What?
If you have your mask on and somebody coughing around you, I'm sure that mask is going to block off a lot of that stuff.
Well,
more than 90% of that stuff that they're coughing.
Block
Come on,
the
Greg.
Droplets. What? You doubt me? I'm a radio host.
Which is the stuff that will get you sick, right? So if it's blocking most of the stuff that will get you sick, isn't that worth wearing?
Well, except that the stuff that it blocks sits there in front of your face and grows bigger and uglier and nastier with your breath, you know. And this is what Lab Tech X explained to us, that the masks, you know, because obviously they shield light. So it's a dark, humid, warm environment. That's where bacteria and viruses and germs grow best. They love that stuff. So the mask is the perfect place to grow infections. So I would say that you have a much greater chance that you got sick because of the mask, not because of what the mask allegedly blocked. Ooh, there's a thought for you. Oh, I know. Scary, huh? Trust me. I know stuff. I'm in radio.
Yeah, I know. You know a lot of stuff. I show a lot of respect for you. You know a lot of stuff.
Thank you. I got a brain that just, you know, packs stuff in. It's just, you know, it's my curse.
And you know what? We're only using this small percentage of it. Isn't that something?
That's what I hear, but how do you know? How do you know you're only using a small percentage of your brain? Let's look at an evolutionary speaking. Why would God create a brain for us that we're only using part of? How is that evolutionarily beneficial? How is that?
Well, listen.
How is that good for us as a species, as an organism, to only be using part of our brain? How does that make any sense?
Okay. First of all, I don't believe in the evolutionary part of it, but I can tell you that we were designed to go on forever. We were created to live forever.
Okay.
We are only living 70, 80 years. You know, some would be 106 years old, right?
That's
short-lived. But if we were designed to go on forever, imagine what we could do with this amazing brain we were created with. So because we have such a short lifespan, we're only using 1% of it. And we still get a whole lot accomplished. I mean, look, man has gotten to the moon. Look at these technologies. I mean, we're talking, 2,000 miles away, and, you know, we can click a button and we can see each other, you know. It's amazing.
The technology now allows me to do radio worldwide, you know, from my desk at home.
Yeah.
You know,
look at
that. Technology is amazing. You know, I agree with you there. Well, here's the thing. I've always found creation and evolution compatible. Because, you know, I talked to my daughter about this. You know, the difference between a God day and an Earth day. I mean, we don't know how long God's days are. You know, those 7 days of God's days to create the world could have been millions of years of Earth days. You know,
let's say 1,000 years.
Okay.
A day for 1,000, right?
But the equivalent, it's certainly worth arguing, but there's not necessarily an equivalency in time. And so what if evolution is part of the creation? I'm not saying, you know, species to species, because I don't think that happens. It doesn't make sense to me that a species, the mutations, which are the bad things, will create whole new species out of nothing. That doesn't make sense to me. Genetically, it doesn't work. So evolution doesn't work genetically. But in other words, as we adapt, think of evolution in terms of adapting. Human beings are bigger.
Uh-huh.
We live longer. Our brains are bigger. So we are changing as human beings from what we were 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago. You know, so the changes in humans is very rapid. Now, I'm not talking about a genetic evolution, but just but more an adaptative, a biological evolution. So we've got this brain. And we're not using all of our brain, because I can't see that, you know, we'd have brain that we weren't using. Why would we have it? That doesn't make sense. Things that aren't used in nature tend to disappear. That's why our appendix is getting smaller, you know, with each generation. I guess it used to have some function way back when, but now it just sits there until it goes bad, you know, and they may have to take it out. But think about the waste of time that our society forces people into. You know, the amount of time you have to spend on a job as opposed to creating something. You know, if you take typical, you know, like a person with a family, okay, you've got kids you're raising, you've got a spouse, you've got a job, you know, you've got family, you've got holidays, you've got, you know, you might have to work and take home. You know, there's different things. Like if you're a tour guide, you got to study, you know, new material, new things happening. You got to go watch the news. You got to keep up on current events. You got to keep up with the cruise ships, what's coming in, who isn't. So there's a lot of work involved in work. Mm-hmm. How much time in your day or your week or your month or your year is there to be really creative and philosophical and pontificating? And I'm throwing out the biggest words I can think of right now. But how much time, but think about how much time do you actually have, you know, for you to like lie in the hammock, watch the stars, you know, between the palm trees, and just think about, you know, okay, I want to do something really creative. I want to use all my brain now. There's not a lot of time engineered into our society for using that brain. I think that's where the waste is. What do you think?
Okay, so So perfect. So now that's where forever kicks in, right?
Okay.
That's where forever kicks in. So that's why, like for me now, my hope is that if I die, right? I mean, we grew up, you know, learning religions at school, at church, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So my hope, I don't know about you, if I die, let's say, boom, I die next week, car accident on the way home from work.
Mm-hmm.
My hope is to wake up and live again. And that life that I'll wake up to live in the future will be perfect. And then we'll be able to experience the forever that the Creator created me and you and all humans to mm-hmm. enjoy on this earth. And then
yeah.
we'll be able to use the brain to the fullest capacity ever.
Well, see, now here's the thing. That actually makes a lot of sense. And when we talk about faith, for example, faith is believing something, you know, like you have no reason to believe in. You might be interested.
Yeah.
We used to have Wendy Arthur with the Oh My God Report. And so we talked about things like this at least a year or more. It was Wednesday, so you can kind of scroll back to our episodes. I got to find a way to go through them and you know, make a description so people have the dates and things. And I have a lot of work to do. But here's the way I see it. Is that you look at the earth and you look at the universe and you look at all the things that we have here. This planet has everything we need. It's got air, it's
yeah.
got water, it's got minerals, it's got animals, it's got plants, it's got the right temperature, you know, except for the climate
yeah.
change people. You know, it's got rain, it's got, you know, it's got gold. I mean, you look at anything that we need, steel, you know, you look at wood, you know, cotton. I mean, there's nothing that this world doesn't provide for us. Now, you can't tell me that's an accident.
No way.
Yeah. See, that doesn't make any sense.
That came about by a wonderful designer, right?
Exactly. And that's the whole theory of intelligent design. So if we have this existence and this dimension and this mass universe that I'm not sure what most of it's doing, but it's obviously doing something that we don't quite understand, why would it be a stretch to believe that there is an intelligent designer, that there are forces beyond our understanding, that there are dimensions that we can't see? You know, we've got the three dimensions you can, then the fourth is time, which we can measure. And once you start getting fifth, sixth, and seventh, you start getting carried away there. We don't know what's out there. Nobody knows the mystery of dying until they die. And then, you know, but my thing is, I'm sort of hedging my bets a little bit because I'm trying to do everything I can in this life because, A, I think that's our responsibility. You know, God gives you gifts.
Rick,
and
I like you.
Well, thank you. I like you, too.
You got a lot
yeah.
up there.
it's not my fault. I don't take any responsibility for this. You know, it's like God looked into, you know, my head and said, I'm going to put ideas there. And I'm like, why me? Because God then says, well, why not you? And then you go, okay, fine.
Exactly.
So we know how this argument goes. Right? But, you know, and like I said, you can look at this logically and you can look at this and the things that we don't know, but you have to be comfortable with the things you don't know. To believe in God, you have to be comfortable in what you don't know. And there's a lot of people
yeah,
that can't
exactly.
do that. They can't do that.
Hey, Greg.
And, yeah, go ahead. What do you think?
Hey, Greg, just a sec. This dog mm-hmm. is just looking me in my face and say, hey, I need to go out. I need my food.
All right. Well, why don't you just put the phone down for a minute. I'll play a couple of things. I'll give you about 3 minutes. And if you're not there, I'll just talk without you.
Okay. Yeah.
Let me mute your line for a second. We'll come right back to you. This is funny. This is Action Radio, okay? So Alan has to let his dog out. He'll be back. So here I'm talking to Belize. This is how we do things around here. So just I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's page one. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Of course, I recorded that when I had a cold. Or I had my Omicron cold. Sorry, this really gravelly voice. It's kind of funny. Let's get back to Alan, see if he's back there. So is the dog okay? You're okay? You're back?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
He's happy.
This is live radio. I got buttons I can push. I can do anything here. This is kind of fun. Did you want to continue our discussion? Because it's really quite fascinating. This is why I love talking to you. You know, and like I say, here we are, two totally different people, different cultures, different countries, you know, different parts of the world, different climates, different everything. And yet we have this common bond that we can talk about, you know, our own creation and our own humanity. And it's fascinating. This is why I love these exchanges. I wonder if anybody else wants to join us. 215-383-3832. It's not just the Greg and Alan hour, although it seems to be turning into that sometimes. Yeah. Well, let's get on to some of the local stuff. So we got the cruise ships are coming in. Like what's happening in Belize now? You've got your version of winter, which probably isn't much. It's freezing out here. We got like 2 months of cold up here. Well, freezing used to be in Canada, you know, 20 below zero. When I was in Toronto when I was a kid, that was freezing. Freezing now is like 40. So I've changed my definition of freezing. Yeah. Let's see what the current weather is here. I'm going to pull up my cell phone.
You want to know what
Milton,
my freezing
Florida.
Is?
Milton, Florida. It's 41 degrees out there. So to me, that's freezing. How about you? What, 60?
we had our 66. I woke up to this morning, and that's freezing for me.
Oh, my God. 66 degrees? I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
The torture that you have to go through. Our Minnesota listeners are laughing right now hysterically, thinking, 66? We would just, yeah. So you might get a whole bunch of people, you know, flying into Belize now. If 66 is your freezing, then, yeah.
Yeah,
that's kind
of
nice.
This is like one of my coldest mornings for this month.
I'm sorry. Did you have trouble getting going this morning? Did you have to drink a lot of hot tea or your your echinacea mix?
I had that thing boil a little extra.
I'm sorry you have to suffer such tragedies. I mean, 66 degrees. I mean, really now. Well, it's interesting that in California, the winters were pretty actually fairly warm because we had the ocean and we had the bay, and the bay heats up during the summertime, and then with the overcast and the fog, it sort of retains the heat. So in San Francisco, it would be 50, 55 degrees, you know, daytime. That was the winter temperature. That was cool. But the summer, because the fog rolled in, it was like 60 to 65 degrees. So our temperature only varied like 10 to 15 degrees all year, except in the spring and the fall from 3 weeks when it got up to like 100 and something. You know, so we have these three miserable weeks. The rest of the year is pretty nice. But Florida's a little different because where I am in the panhandle, in the upper northwest or the left corner, we're subject to the winds whistling down from the Midwest and the northern Midwest. And so we've had snow here. You know, we've had some stuff, and it's just, I'm thinking, okay, it's only a couple of months. I guess I can do it. We're almost, you know, we're halfway through January. You believe we're halfway through January already? How'd that happen?
I know. It's going so fast, too fast.
Yeah. Well, you got to slow down and do stuff. Keep doing stuff.
Well,
as I
what?
Say, the check go ahead.
This.
Go ahead.
Check this out. I mean, it's going to be next Sunday. It'll
mm-hmm.
be 2 years my dearly beloved left me.
Oh,
two
I'm sorry.
Years.
Yeah. Wow.
It's hard to believe, but time just went by so fast, you know?
Yeah.
Can you believe that, Greg? I call it unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Dad. See, I remember your wife. I remember she was wonderful. And so, yeah, I'm glad to have met her. And, you know, so Alan and I have known each other since, what, 2010, 2009, somewhere in there. So we've known each other like
yeah.
over 10 years. Yeah. We just missed a little bit in the
yeah.
middle. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's interesting.
That's right.
It's without a Skype line or without, because we're busy. We have our busy lives. And this is another thing I love about radio is I'm able to catch up with people. And I want to get you and Shelby on the line at the same time because she talks on Tuesdays. So if you want to call in and surprise her next Tuesday, she's on at 7 o'clock. So 7 o'clock Central Time.
You know what?
What?
I
want to do that?
I listened to her this week. I listened to her
okay.
this week, actually.
Yeah.
Since I was
good.
Home, I tuned in and I said, oh, listen to that. That's Shelby. We had some great times together.
Well, call in, surprise her. I won't mention it to her. We'll have some fun. See if she's listening.
Yeah,
if she's listening today, she'll know. But yeah. So she's on Tuesday. Chansey, our wellness person, is on Wednesday at. Well, I'll send you the schedule. But Chansey's on at 8. Shelby's on Tuesdays at 7.
No, I think I have the schedule, Greg. I think I have the schedule.
Okay, it's changed a little bit. I got to send you a new one. Because Chansey's now moved to Wednesdays. She used to be Tuesdays. And so I'll send you a new one. But yeah, that way you'll know. But if you got some time, you know, especially talk, she'd love to hear from you. That'd be great fun. So this is, we all know each other from cruising, just for the folks that are new to what we're talking about here. Yeah, go ahead.
We stay in touch. Shelby, we keep in touch. Every once in a while we would send a little short message on Facebook Messenger, you know. Matter of fact, she had a chance to spend a little time. She had a little time on ashore. She came off the
uh-huh.
ship. I think she came off the ship just to spend a little time with my wife. So
aww.
They went to the Radisson and they had a little coffee time together there.
Uh-huh.
And I think a 15, 20 minutes and then she got back on the ship. That was precious. That was a precious little last moment she spent with my wife.
And you don't realize at the time how special some of the moments are. You know, like I remember, you know, band performances or time with friends or and then something happens, you know, and it's just, you know, the fact that we can now chat again here on radio. It's just, you've got, and this is, you know, as the days go by, and as I've said to a lot of folks, you know, the days may be long, but the years are short. And I know that sounds like a contradiction.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how it works. So you've got to take the time, like we're talking about earlier, you know, with your brain. How much of your brain are you using? You know, take the time to use your brain and use your time. And so if like more people are working at home now, you know, I know that's a byproduct of COVID is more and more people are working at home. Well, what that means is more time with your family, more time with your kids. You've got less time commuting. You know, people aren't sitting in traffic as much. I don't hear about people complaining about traffic. You know, so there's one. So there's good and bad in everything, but you got to find the good. And the good, one of the things that happened with COVID is that people realized they didn't have to go to an office. And I never liked offices anyway. But you don't have to sit in a cubicle all day, so you don't have to, you know, have a boss looking at you all the time. You can work from home. So what it proves is that people were more independent than bosses thought anyway. So that's a good thing too. But less commute. You know, fewer hours in the car going back and forth, sitting in traffic. Now you can take your car and
that's
go traveling
stress.
For fun.
That's less stress, Greg.
Exactly.
You know, sitting in traffic.
Well, you guys didn't much
being in traffic.
Much traffic anyway. I mean, what was the Belize traffic jam? What did that look like?
Going down in the morning, like if let's say I leave from here right now.
Okay.
6:39 right now, local time.
Uh-huh. Right.
I will get in a little traffic right about 10 minutes before the city, and a little uh-huh. bumper to bumper for about 10 minutes, and that's it. That's every morning.
Isn't that wonderful?
And yeah, and then in the evening time, if you leave like 5 o'clock or a little after 5, you're going to uh-huh. be in a little half an hour jam until you get to like the airport area, which is like, you know, 10 miles out of the city.
Well, the airport's like half as long as the whole country. I mean, your runway's like half the country, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, not so much.
The runway's
some of the islands.
3 miles long, Greg.
What's that now?
The runway's about 3 miles long. The runway's only about 3 miles long.
Yeah, but it's interesting. You know, like some of the, like St. Thomas and St. Croix and some of these Caribbean islands, the runway, you know, covers like most of the island. It's kind of funny.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So they have runway crossings. You know, don't cross when the jets are coming in. Okay,
yeah.
Fine.
Interesting, yeah. Right?
Well, but it's an interesting lifestyle. So, like I talk so fast, I have to consciously slow down because you and I talk at different speeds, and I'm trying to watch, you know, walking all over everything you're saying. And so, but it makes sense though. You've got, this is one of the beauties of Belize, is you've got more time. You can kind of kick back a little bit. You don't have to be in overdrive. You know, so
yeah,
like I am
exactly.
most of the time. Yeah. Okay.
We always say that we live a laid-back life here in Belize. Everything
yeah,
seems
probably,
to slow down here in Belize. Slow yeah. pace, you know?
Yeah,
you
probably live longer, too.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I hear the dog in the background. That's okay.
That's the neighbor's one. That's the
neighbor's dog. Well, they'll yell at them. No, anyway.
Yeah.
We have, I have this live radio. We hear everything that happens, we hear. We hear people, you know, making tea, and they don't think that they can. We can hear. We can hear. The phones pick up everything. They're so good now. Technology is amazing. And this is like we didn't even have this a few years ago. So think about the technology. Here I am sitting in my desk in my cottage. You know, I've got my computer in front of me. I'm talking to you in Belize, like you're next door. Sure, like you're sitting across from me at a table.
I know.
You know, we have folks listening from Brazil to Azerbaijan to Japan. You know, to Russia,
what?
To here. Oh yeah, there are people listening all over the world. Not a lot of them yet, but they're listening.
Right.
And here's where it's going to get interesting. Like I say, I'm working with some New Zealand folks now. I'm going to see if I can connect with the Israeli folks today, and then of course the Australian folks probably maybe Saturday. So this is my next project, is to get the international folks in here, because the idea, for active, I don't know how politically active. You know, this Belize. It sounds like you got a pretty good situation. Your government is not doing what a lot of governments are doing, or people. At least the mandates are tolerable. But there are some places like Australia. They're taking tennis players and putting them in these what they're calling hotels. They're like little prisons. You know, for not being vaccinated.
Well,
they said not being vaccinated. You know, not being vaccinated and vaccinated against something that is 99.95%. irrelevant to the relation, other than you might get, you know, mild or even moderate symptoms. So for the vast majority of people, you know, unless you're in the biggest victims are nursing home. And that makes sense, because they're the most, some of the most helpless people, the most, one of the most helpless times of their life. You know, so it makes sense that they're vulnerable because they're old. They can't take care of themselves.
Right.
You know, so, but those are the ones that are so the greatest chance of getting, you know, having serious effects from COVID. But if you're a tennis athlete in your early 20s,
I know. Great.
I mean, get real. But this is the insanity of government, that they're either in it for the marketing, the money, or the power, or they're just nuts. And I haven't quite figured out which.
Wow.
You know,
that's
but
amazing.
So what we're going to try and do is this is something that I've discovered. This, and I had this idea, you know, back in 2014, that you could have a radio show that
sure.
actually wrote legislation, where we could write bills and send them to government and say, here. This is how we choose to be governed, you know. And there are people in Australia, and like I say, New Zealand and Israel, the usual activities is you beg the government to give up power. Well, governments don't give up power; they love power.
No.
And if they're writing the laws to give themselves more power, why can't we write the laws to take away their power? I mean, we're the people. So this is how this is all evolving. So, but it's an education process. It's almost like I give people permission to write laws that they can submit directly to government, because no one's thought to do this until now. So I find it so fascinating. So as the activists realize that you can do more than carry signs and write letters and, you know, scream and yell, because governments are used to dealing with that. But what they're not used to dealing with, and where this is going to be so fascinating, is they're not used to dealing with mass amounts of people saying, this is the law that we want. Here it is. What are you going to do? What are you going to do now? You know, and by the way, there's an election coming up in 6 months, a year, you know, 2 weeks, whatever. You know, so people will actually, I'm thinking that people might actually vote for laws as opposed to candidates. So if this works out the way I think it might, the laws that are being proposed by citizens in their own country to their own government might even be more important than the candidates. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. What do you think?
Sounds pretty interesting.
Okay. Well,
hey,
see what happens.
The sun is coming up, man. It's looking nice.
Well, there you go. Yeah,
sunrise.
It's probably warm. Yeah, it's over 66 now. Well, I'm going to let you go in a little bit because there's something I want to cover. We have Florida Carry is an organization that, one of our reporters, Jim Dykes, who's on at 8 o'clock. So he's on in a bit. He's one of the directors of this. And so Florida used to lead in Second Amendment gun rights, and they fell way behind. And so what we're trying to get here, Florida Carry is an organization dedicated to so that we can carry firearms openly. We don't need a permit. We don't need government permission. We just carry guns if we want to carry guns. If you're a law-abiding citizen,
really?
You know, you want to carry a gun, carry a gun. You know, that's our right under the Constitution, although it's been taken away by most governments. Now, many states have this right now, but we don't have it in Florida, even though Florida pioneered the concealed carry permit system, whereby the government had to give you one if you met certain basic criteria. Law-abiding citizen, you know, whatever it was, they very simple stuff. So everybody could get a permit. Well, what we're saying now is you don't need a permit. The Constitution is your permit. You know, so you should have the ability to carry guns openly. And so this is what I'll be talking about. Because go ahead.
Do you carry a gun?
Mm-hmm. Sure do.
Why?
Yeah.
Why do you carry a gun?
Because I'm a free man. That's a great question.
You're a free man.
I'm a free man, yeah. So to me, part of being free is carrying the symbol of my freedom, the implement of my freedom, the means of my self-defense to preserve my freedom, to preserve myself, to save my life, the lives of people around me if necessary, you know, there's a bunch of reasons. But the biggest reason I did it, one of the things I liked about coming to Florida and getting a concealed carry permit is one of the first things I did here, because I wanted to know what it was like as a free man, as a non-government, you know, employee, non-government law enforcement officer or any kind of officer, what it was like to carry a gun.
Sure.
And so that's why I did it. So to me, the only reason you need to carry a gun is that you want to. Now, of course, I agree with training and, you know, being responsible. And there are safety rules and things like that. I mean, there's a lot to it. You don't just do it, you know, but, you know, I'm a pilot. So, I mean, I it's the same kind of mentality that I approach guns with, that I approach flying with. Be careful. Be trained. You know, make sure that you're safe to do it. You know, you don't carry a gun when you're not feeling well. You don't carry a gun when you're – but you wouldn't drive in that situation either. You know, if you're more dangerous with it, then you don't carry it. But I carry a gun all the time. I carry it in Florida. The only place you really can't carry a gun, schools and bars for some reason, you know, because of the alcohol. So as long as you're not sitting, as long as you're not, and this makes a certain amount of sense, but as long as you're not sitting at a bar, you know, and schools, and there's like a few other exceptions, you know, but for the most part, you know, you can carry a gun in your bank, in your drugstore, you can carry a gun in, you know, just driving in your car, you know, you can carry a gun most places. And because of that, in Florida, there's a lot of lower crime rates in places that have concealed carry permits and then open carry, where people can carry a gun visibly. So so the argument now in Florida is to try and be able to carry a gun visibly and without a permit. So that's what we're going for. It's a good question, because in Belize you can't do this. You don't have a Second Amendment.
No.
But you might not feel the need for it in Belize either. So it just but
no.
Do you think how would you feel if you carried a gun? Well, how would that change you? Or would you want to?
I don't think I will ever have a need or a desire to carry a gun. I personally don't like guns, to be honest.
Okay, that's
because
fine.
I know they I know the purpose of a gun, the reason for a gun, and the effects of a gun, and so I don't really like a gun.
Okay.
But I see people carry them. Here you have to be licensed. You got to get a license to carry a gun. Yeah. And then there are certain places that you can't go in with a gun, like the banks. The banks won't let you go in with a gun, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. In fact, I'm going to bring Shirley Wattrall, who does our DC project, Women and Guns Report. She called in a little bit early, which is good. So I'm going to bring her on now. So Shirley, you're on with Alan Dawson, who's my tour guide friend in Belize. So feel free to join our conversation anytime. Thanks for calling in early. See what happens when you call in early? You get benefits. It's good. Good morning, Shirley.
Morning, Shirley.
So we just happened to
talk today.
Oh, go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I was just saying morning to Shirley.
Good morning, Alan.
How are you doing today? You had your coffee yet?
No, I have not. Actually, I was on earlier listening to the show, and I don't know if it's my Wi-Fi or something was cutting up, so I'm hoping that you all can hear me. But,
oh, no,
you're
fine.
I was just catching the last bit of your discussion about Second Amendment and concealed carry.
Well, and you called right at that moment, which I think is fantastic. So I just wanted—that's why I brought you on right away. See if you wanted to add to the discussion. So Alan doesn't feel any need to carry a gun, doesn't want to. But I would point out that, and this is something we talk about this stuff all the time, Alan, that the uses of guns are everything from target shooting, hunting, collecting. People like to work on them. They fuss over them and add all kinds of extra stuff in competition. You know, there's a ton of things you can do with guns. You know, if all you're thinking about is the evil effects of what criminals do with guns, it's going to give you a sort of slanted perspective, I think. That's the neighbor's dog, Shirley.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Firearms. There's a lot of shooting sports, and like you said, hunting, and there's a lot of other uses for firearms other than self-defense. Self-defense is just, in my opinion, just a little perk that you get so you can, you know, defend yourself and your family. But yeah, when you get into shooting sports, there's a lot of good, you know, whether it be shooting clays or sporting clays, trap, skeet, or even target shooting. It's all, I don't know, for me, when I go out, when I come back from the range, it relaxes me. People find that funny, but it does. After I go to the range, I'm just all chilled out and driving home going, oh, everything's cool now.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Alan, what do you think? A nice day at the range, a little target shooting. What do you think?
I'm gonna have to come out there and go and experience one of the range and target practice and all that stuff. I've never been exposed to those stuff, so I'm green when it comes to, you know, what all can be done with a gun and the different uses and the recreational aspects of it and hunting and all that stuff.
Well, I'll introduce you to Ted Nugent when we're friends. Go ahead, Shirley. I'm sorry.
You're willing to give it a try. That you never know. It might be something new that you like and enjoy doing. I've never gone hunting yet. That's another one in my bucket list. I plan to go hunting my first time, maybe this year, since hopefully I'll be running around here soon.
So
yeah,
you
how's the recovery going?
Target practice, Shirley?
I do. I was doing 3 guns. For a few years now. I haven't done anything probably in the past. Yeah, I haven't done anything except for do some instruction in the past year. I had a hip replacement done last January and then a reconstruction done in December. So I've been kind of out of it for a little
out
bit.
Out of it.
Eager to get back into it, though.
Yeah, Shirley's a firearms instructor, and so this is why you know, on the show and doing DC project. We'll get into her report in a little bit. But yeah, if you have any questions, Alan, Shirley's the one to ask.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah, I'll be getting off here in a little bit.
Well, that's fine.
6 minutes. Yeah. But yeah, sure was nice to be on with you again today. I've been out for over a month, right?
Well, you're welcome every time. I sort of keep this time aside for you on Friday mornings. You know, I keep thinking it's going to be half an hour, and then we go all this extra time, so it works out quite nicely. But, yeah.
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what's been happening lately is that, you know, the cruise ship has been increasing, and then we've been getting more work, and so I've been busy. And then once I'm not doing cruise ship, I've been doing construction. So I've been
doing construction
all week long.
Wow.
Yeah, I do.
What do you do?
I work with I do a little helper kind of it.
Okay.
In construction, I don't really master any specific trade in it, but I do everything in it. I mean, I go purchase all the whatever we need for the construction. I go get tools. I grab a shovel and mix cement manually. I use a hammer. I use a drill. I use a circular saw. You know,
uh-huh.
I do everything.
Well, you know what you might want to try? I just thought of Block Talk Radio is worldwide. You could do like an hour show. Or you could do a weekend show. You know, you could do your own little broadcast show. And, of course, I'll tell people when it's on. But if you want to do more radio than just our chats, you know, when you can call in here, that's something you might want to think about. You got that radio voice. And I know you love a microphone. I mean, all tour guides do. It's in our blood. We were talking about that earlier. But you look in the Blog Talk. You know, it might be interesting to have like a local Belize show. And then you could talk directly to the cruise ships. You could give like a cruise ship report that they could pick up on the cruise ships. How's that for a thought?
Oh, that would be cool. Well, you got to link me there, Greg. You got to point
okay.
me in the right direction.
All right, I'll make a big note to myself. Yeah, Blog Talk and Ellen, Cruise Ship Central. You know who would appreciate that is Shelby. She could probably get you connected with the cruise ships if you had your own radio show from Belize. As the cruise ships are approaching, to give the local news, weather, well, they can pick that up anyway online. But it'd be more fun to hear it from you. They call in. You could say
cool.
You know, you could say what restaurants were having, what specials, you know, and well, what's going on in Belize today? If I wanted to drop in there, so surely I could let you know too. We're all going to Belize for a week, all of us Action Radio folks. So Alan's going to show us around. As soon as they get rid of their mask mandates and vaccine mandates, we're all going to hop down there and have some fun. So you're going to have to join
us.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
I'd love to.
Yeah. So Block Talk and Alan, I'm making a big note to myself. To get you guys connected. So
yeah,
you got
to get Shirley down here to enjoy some of these fried jacks with refried beans and bacon and eggs for breakfast.
Oh, that sounds good. I'm hungry now.
He does this every time. He's terrible. He does this every time to us. He gives us like the menu, you know, and the worst is Bianchi gets really upset. It's like, what's for dinner? You know, actually, we got Josie calling in right now too. So Josie, you're on with Shirley and Alan in Belize. Good morning, Josie.
Alan and Belize, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good
Hello.
Morning. Good. Great.
Good,
it's a beautiful
good.
Morning.
Yeah, it is. Over here, too. Cold and Milton.
Uh-oh.
I was gonna
I'm
ask
sorry.
You. Yeah,
great,
I
Jesse.
Know. I was going to ask you, in Belize, do you guys have to have the card in order to do anything, the vaccine card?
Some places will ask you for it, but no, most places you can just walk in, yeah. But just certain places will ask for it.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
Josie,
I know, Greg, I'm driving.
Oh, go ahead.
Might be a little thing, and I have an appointment at 7, so got a couple minutes.
Well, let me just tell you real quickly that Alan has the government of Belize. Alan has tested for positive for COVID, but the government of Belize is giving out ivermectin as part of the cure.
Praise God! It's
yeah,
like a miracle medicine. Yeah, there was a lady in my Sunday school class full of blood clots in her leg, and the doctor said, "I don't know what's wrong with it." I said, "I know exactly what's wrong with it. Blood clots because of the vaccine." And she started taking ivermectin, and a couple weeks later, she was clear from the blood clots.
Wow.
But, you know, vaccinated people, they're going to have to start taking ivermectin in order to help themselves. And one of our friends that has a show, Truth on RTV, he was telling us the other night that they're discovering that in a lot of different areas in America, there's different number lots of the vaccines that they keep track, and some of them are spike and some of them are not. So it's like Russian roulette. You don't know if you need to take ivermectin, or you're going to die from all the blood clots. So they were discovering different areas, and we don't know if this is the conservative areas that there were spike, the vaccines, or not. But Judy Mikovich was telling us in 2019 that Anthony Fauci spiked all the flu shots to make sure Americans that took the flu shot will have the COVID. And that's why our country is the most contaminated with COVID in the world, the United States of America, because of Anthony Fauci. So I truly believe that all the vaccine for flu shots right now are contaminated too, their spike. So this is criminal what's happening in the United States.
Alan, what do you think?
Ooh, that's nasty.
Well, see, we're convinced here, we're convinced that this is a marketing campaign, that the big government, big health, big pharma, big tech are all cooperating in this effort to make billions upon billions of dollars, you know, off this country, because this is a rich country. And so they're forcing, you know, and the vaccine, the thing is, most people that have Omicron have been vaccinated. You know, like you. So it's interesting that it's the vaccinated who are getting the Omicron. Okay, now Omicron is actually the recent thought is that Omicron is going to solve this problem because Omicron is a vaccine itself. Once you've had Omicron, you're now immune to COVID, or at least you should be, or at least that variant. So it's a very mild disease that you get. It's a mild virus that your body gets over and now has immunity. So if you have immunity, you don't need the vaccine. So it actually is a vaccine itself. So there's a lot of thought that this is going to move.
So now they're going to stop with the vaccinations now because everybody's going to get Omicron.
Everybody's getting Omicron. Well, everybody's been exposed to all the variants. There's alpha, beta, gamma, delta, lambda, and then they skipped a couple, and then they went to Omicron. You know, so there's all these variants out there. And so the beauty of this is that once you get it, you know, we're building natural immunity whether the government wants us to or not. So maybe you can go to Belize with that. Listen to our shows. Listen to like Judy Mikovits, and see if you can convince the Belizean government to ease up a little bit. What do you think?
Yeah, there you go.
I got another question for you. Do people that you know of, is the war going around that people are dying from the vaccine, or they're saying they're just dying from COVID in your island there?
What's her question, though, Greg?
Well, are people dying
from the vaccine? Are people dying from the vaccine that you know of, or are they saying just from the COVID?
No, just from the COVID. We don't have any cases of people dying from the vaccine, not yet. And we have about 607 deaths total
from COVID.
Yeah.
You mean from remdesivir?
Well, and Shirley, don't go away. We're going to get to you in just a minute here. But this is really – are your hospitals, Alan, are they doing the remdesivir ventilator treatment, which usually ends up with death? Or are they giving ivermectin?
They are doing a ventilator treatment, but I don't know what kind of medication they're using it. I'll find out, and then I'll let you know when I call in again next time, okay?
So can people take ivermectin over the counter? Is it available by prescription? Because that'll prevent COVID as well as cure it.
Yeah, you can get it. You can get it in the pharmacies over the counter.
Bingo. That's what's saving you.
Wow.
That's what's keeping you all alive. Yep, that's why you don't have any COVID problems.
Exactly.
Praise God.
Yeah. Shirley, you want to get in on this? What do you think?
Yeah, so I have a question. So is your media, what are they reporting? Do they actually report what's going on, do you feel, or do they kind of distort it to whatever their agenda is?
Alan?
No, I think for the most part, I think they're reporting, you know, what it really is. Yeah, that's what I'm deciphering from it.
You know, Alan, a lot of the leaders in all the country, each country, they're corrupt. They're getting millions of dollars from China and from Bill Gates and from George Soros to kill their own citizens in their country. Like Peru is one of the very, very involved countries, Spain, Italy, Ecuador, Costa Rica now, and Colombia. They're very, very involved giving all these mandates, orders with the vaccine. Now, What I do not know for sure is the vaccine that we have in America, Spike, it's happening in other countries because Russia and Cuba has their own vaccines. They're not taking any of the Pfizer. A lot of the people from Honduras in Nicaragua, where I'm from, they were lined up over there in Honduras traveling to get the Pfizer from America. And I'm like, oh, no, don't do that. So I really don't know if the Cuban or Russian or maybe from other countries vaccine is the same like what we're giving here, Spike, in different areas to kill people, because that's exactly what's happened. I already buried a couple of my family members from the vaccine, blood clots in their head, and a stroke the other one. And many of our church members are having heart attacks and stroke. Many have died already in my church. I go to a big church. So the vaccine, and I hear a story from all the nurses because I own a uniform store. So the best place to get the news is my store. And I hear everything that is happening in our area of Pensacola and also Milton, and where Greg is from, and me too. So it's very sad what is happening, but the vaccine is killing many, killing more than 50 million in America, the vaccine.
Wow.
Yeah, I hope it's not that. I don't think it's going to be that high. At least I hope not. But there's some big problems. And we've been talking about this for 2 years, Ellen. So this is why, we're so concerned. And Josie's absolutely right. When she talks about spike, we're talking about the spike proteins, the things that actually give you COVID. Now, maybe you have a different vaccine. Who makes the one that you guys have in Belize? Is it Pfizer, Moderna? What's it called?
I think we just started getting Pfizer in the second half of last year. I think we started getting Pfizer, but the one that was first in here was AstraZeneca. That's the one I got.
That's
not from Europe. The Zona Farm, I think, the one from China. We have the Zona Farm here.
You have the Chinese vaccine in Belize? Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trust that one. I wouldn't trust anything out of communist China.
Hey, Greg, I'm so sorry, but I have to go. God bless you guys. I have to
God bless
my
you too. Thanks
now.
For your information. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Bye-bye. God bless
good,
you, Alan.
Good to hear from you. Have a good day.
Yeah, we got to get into Shirley's report anyway, so we were limited on time. But do you have any closing thoughts, and we'll get you back. This is why you have to call in every Friday, Alan. Find a way. You're too popular, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the way it is. Yeah.
I will get in again next Friday because I will be home. That will be my last day in quarantine. But then the following week, I'll be back on regular schedule. But for now, okay. I got to go to my dad's calling me as well. So I need to check on him because he did he did a pacemaker surgery back in 2018 in California. Uh-huh. And he went to see his cardiologist this week, and the cardiologist had a little bad news for him that his heart rate is dropping.
Oh, no.
It's 42 beats per minute now.
Oh, that's
down,
low.
So.
Yeah, definitely. Up the pacemaker. Replace the battery, whatever you have to do.
Nothing's wrong with the pacemaker. He said the pacemaker is fine.
Oh.
It's just the heart. Yeah, so he told him that there's nothing to do now. He says any minute, he could kick the bucket.
Wow,
so we talked about it. And
Yeah,
so I got to get back. My dad, he's calling, so let me check on him. I need
Absolutely.
To check on
Let's
him more
to.
Frequently now.
Yeah. Oh, well, you should.
So,
yeah, more prayers.
It was a fun morning. It was a very great morning, Greg. It was good to reconnect again. And so I wish you guys a great rest of the week. Enjoyed today. Have a good weekend.
Prayers for your
Be
father.
Safe.
Yeah, prayers for your father, too.
Yeah.
So go talk to him, and we'll catch you next Friday. Thank you, Alan.
Great
Thank
talking
you.
To you, Alan. Prayers to your dad for speedy recovery.
Thank you so much. So Alan Dawson here from Belize with Action Radio. Have a good day.
So good. Thanks, Alan.
Bye-bye now.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
See the fun we have here, Shirley? You never know who's going to call in. We had Alan from Belize. We had Josie. We've got you. And I mean, it's interesting. We had a truly international show because I'm Canadian by birth. Josie's Nicaraguan. Alan's in Belize. And you're probably the only natural-born American on the show right now. At least you were.
I guess so.
Yeah.
So Josie seems very interesting, too.
Well, Jessie's
in Florida?
On a lot.
Is that what I heard her say?
No, she lives in Milton here, where I live in Florida, and she has a store in Pensacola. And so Josie I've known for years. Josie I got to know back at when I was at WBY, which was the old, 1330 AM WBY, Northwest Florida's news and talk leader. And now it's a station that got bought out. I got kicked out as well as everybody else after a while. And now it's changed. But so Josie and I, I've known her, 5 years, the 5 years that I've been here. So one of the first folks I met, cause she was a caller to my show then. And so, she's an activist. She has all kinds of knowledge of stuff. She's really getting, is a huge source of information and does our Latina report, on Tuesdays at 7:30. So Tuesdays are kind of wild. I have the first hour, and then we have Shelby Frenette, who Alan knows also. In fact, all three of us got to know each other when I was working with Shelby on a cruise, and then we went to Belize, and that's how I got to know Alan. So we're all buds. I have all my friends on the show. It's kind of
weird. Isn't it amazing how you meet people and hook up with them, and then they become part of your life? It's awesome.
It is amazing. This is why I wonder if anything's really a coincidence. Because I've had some weird jobs in my life, flight instructor, tour guide. I was with customs for a while after 9/11, trying to serve my country until they said I couldn't because they put me in a little booth, for 8 hours a day scanning passports. I said, guys, I'm going crazy. I can't do this. I'm ADHD anyway, so putting me in a cubicle is like suicidal, and so you've got to give me something else to do. And they wouldn't do it. Well, you're too old. I was like 42 at the time. Oh. What do you mean I'm too old? I was leaping 6 foot walls, qualifying physically, within like 6 months, and now I'm too old. So I ended up leaving because they hired all these new young 20 something, specially trained, extra training agents. And, basically we were the Band-Aids to carry customs over before it became, customs border protection. So that was an interesting experience, but all these different jobs that I've had. My internship in Washington, my college experience, different things I've done, starting businesses here and there. You look at them separately. It's like, what the hell is that all about? It was weird, but they all have a place in Action Radio. That's the funny part about it. And the people that I meet and the people
so
I meet from the
you're
people
building
I meet.
Up. You're building up to where you are today. It was your journey.
Yeah, but I had no idea. That's the weird part.
Yeah, really. We don't. Who would do that? I'd be sitting here talking to you.
Exactly. And who knew that you were going to be, soon to be world famous firearms instructor, from where you started. So, stuff happens.
Stuff happens. Who knew? And then write a book and be a Florida State director for DC Project. There's just so many things that I just, you just kind of enjoy the ride and hang on.
Exactly. I said almost the same thing. It's like, let go and let God, or in my case, really let go and just hang on and see what happens. And so, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. But you got to be open to that. And a lot of people aren't open to the opportunities that are presented. There's a fear. There's something holding them back. I think one of the biggest, limitations of our human potential is the fear of the unknown. I welcome the unknown. I love the unknown. I mean, I dive right in. So where does this go?
Well, that's great. I mean, I don't have that. I still, I'll lean back a little bit and go, really? This isn't really you, Shirley. And I'm like, no, but obviously
what's
God's
the worst
got
can
a plan for you. Exactly.
Yeah. Do you ever ask Do you ever ask yourself what's
sometimes
the worst thing that can happen? And then you find that the worst thing isn't that bad, and then you just do it anyway?
Well, that's true. You look at it that way. That's true. That's very true. So anyway, all good. How you doing
let's talk
today?
DC Project. Yeah, let's talk. I'm doing great. Let's talk DC Project and guns, and then we can get back to our philosophical discussions.
All right, we'll talk DC Project. So in case someone doesn't already know, just a little brief summary of what DC Project, it's a national group of nonpartisan women, and we're working just really hard to secure our Second Amendment, basically. That's what it boils down to. And what my goal is to, first I'm going to give you a report of what DC Project is doing. We're doing a lot of stuff. All the different states, everybody has their own state director, and they're all doing their own fundraisers. But one of my goals is to have some amazing women on the show that are doing something awesome, something special. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those amazing women next week today are preparing for SHOT Show. So a lot of people are going to SHOT Show.
Yay, where and when and what's there? I've heard about it, but I've never actually gotten a chance to go.
You have never gone to SHOT Show? Wow.
I'll get there sometime. Yeah.
Yeah, really, you should. And maybe they even put you on Meteor Row. There's a thing called Meteor Row.
Oh, they have Meteor Row. Oh, definitely, I'll go. It's probably too late for this year, and I'm just getting to the point where I can start doing some traveling with the show, and so I'll be at CPAC at the end of February. Are you going to be at CPAC by chance in Orlando?
When is that? I'll write
it's
that
February
down.
23rd you know, to 27th or something, I think.
23rd to 27th.
I'll send you the registration
will see if
information.
Because last year wasn't it canceled because of COVID or something, or is that
nope,
the year
they
before?
Just moved it. They moved it from Washington to Florida because DeSantis is like, come on down, do it here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Washington's like masks, you know, vaccine passports. And, you know, you have a conservative freedom, you know, meeting in a place with those kind of mandates. It's contradictory. And so they moved it to Florida and it's going to be in Orlando. So that's drivable for me. That's like 6-hour drive. So that's easy.
Oh, me too. That's only like 4 hours. Well, it depends.
Well, let's meet. I want to get all our Action Radio people will go meet there. Maybe I can get you a press pass.
Oh, that's
or something like that. You know, a media pass. You should get a pass anyway because of your organization. But I want to broadcast from there. I want to teach the first ever citizen legislative workshops at CPAC. But they're not getting back to me because you know I don't know. I keep trying. So let's see if I can pull that off.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that
DC
sounds
Project.
Like a good class.
Yeah. Well, it's,
anyway,
oh, yeah,
DC Project.
It's what I do on the show every day or SHOT Show. I'm sorry.
SHOT Show starts next Tuesday. It's out in Las Vegas. And basically it's a firearm industry. It covers NSSF puts it on, the National Shooting Sports Foundation. And there's vendors from all over, Smith & Wesson, Ruger. A lot of those vendors are there. I forget how many vendors they have. They've actually expanded. You walk forever. I remember I've been going 9 or 10 years now. This is the first year I'm going to miss, but I get lost every time. I get in rooms, and it's just so huge. And they give you an app. You get an app, and you can go from point A. You say, okay, I want to go to this vendor, and it tries to tell you how to get there. That just confuses me even more.
It's like the World
Wide
Expo or what? Yeah.
That was in Sands Expo Convention Center. Now they added in another section with a walk over to Caesar, something they call it. So that's in two different areas. And I'm like, there's no way I could do all that walking this year. But anyway, I remember the first year, and every year I go, I just stand there for a second, and it's just overwhelming at the number of people. I don't know this year, the attendance may be down. Mm-hmm. I hear from different folks that some of the major vendors, manufacturers of firearms aren't going to be there.
Why?
COVID restrictions.
Oh, the Omicron? Didn't we talk about that in the first hour? Didn't we dismiss that already? Have we dealt with that yet? Don't they listen to my show? What's wrong with these people?
Really? I don't know if they're requiring masks. I have a feeling they're requiring masks. I don't think they have the passport. Last I heard, they weren't doing passports.
Let's think of this in a philosophical sense. You've got people that are advertising and promoting, you know, the Second Amendment and firearms for defense, and yet they're worried about, you know, masks. I'm sorry, I just find that funny.
That's Vegas. Vegas.
Vegas is it?
Yeah, these are Vegas guidelines, not NSSF or any of the. Yeah, these are Vegas guidelines. I don't know all of them. Since I wasn't going, I was like, well, anyway.
You can get like a little cart thing or a motorized something or other to whiz you around there?
Yes, you can rent them. You can. Those
probably
are
expensive.
Pain in the butt because they always run into you.
Oh, that's true. You need bumpers on those. Or,
I need to get a license or something. But it started in 19... Because I did a little research on this because I thought, how long has SHOT Show been around? It's since 1979.
Huh.
And it started in St. Louis. And I believe, if I remember correctly, there's about 6,000 in attendance. And now the last time they had it, they didn't have it last year, was 60,000 in attendance. So it's grown a lot. A few years it was in Orlando. They used to flip between New Orleans, Orlando, and Vegas. But then I guess they outgrew New Orleans and Orlando, so they started having it in Vegas. And I think, if I remember right, they have a contract until 2025, maybe, out there. So, but if you ever can go, it is, like I said, and there's really lots of stuff to see. They bring out their new products.
What's new? What's new for women? What's new for guns? What's new?
Yeah, that's where they present all that stuff, and they have a range day on Monday. And if you get a media pass, you can go there in the morning. Otherwise, it's people coming the regular. And you can't, it's not open to the public. You have to, like, have a business in the firearms industry to get in there.
Okay. So this is mostly like retailers and things. Are people buying directly from the manufacturers? Is this mostly a marketing show?
Yeah, they will throw you off the floor. From what I understand, they will give you the, if you sell anything on their, on the floor.
But no buying contracts, no nothing.
Just
presentations. Got it. Okay.
And they have a lot of parties. But I don't know. Some of these people, they party
all night.
So
that's what they do, the contracts. The parties.
But so DC Project will be there. They're going to, we have our new, another hashtag called hashtag turn shot teal. Because teal is DC Project's color. And they're going, if anyone is going that is listening, we will have a Women of the Gun reception on Wednesday at 5:15.
Women of the Gun. This is a fabulous, this sounds like a great organization. And now presenting Women of the Gun. I got to make a theme on that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Okay.
So that's going to be, and I'll post all this stuff on Facebook, on the Action Radio Facebook.
Good.
It's going to be at the Palazzo Ballroom, L, fifth floor. And door prize. There's a door prize, and it's a gun.
Uh-huh.
It's a Ruger LCP. But you have to be present to win.
LCP, what's that?
What's it stand for?
I don't know.
I don't know what it
Ladies,
for.
Pistol,
my
thing,
but,
I don't
no,
know.
No, but it is an easy rack. It racks real easy. I can't remember what that stands for now.
Oh, the
okay.
Easy one? Yeah. Actually, those are, well, and that's interesting. Has anybody noticed any, because if you have an easy rack, that means the recoil slides lighter. Has that in any way caused any issues with feeding or reliability? Has anything come, or they solved that problem? In which case, why were the recoil springs so stiff in the first place? You got any results on that?
I haven't witnessed any of that because a lot of my students do purchase that and they come out with it, especially a lot of the women. And I haven't had an issue with any of them so far. So that's a good thing. Also, if any women go to the Women of the Gun reception, the first 250 will get a DC Project teal T-shirt to wear for our picture. There's going to be like a picture of everyone wearing a teal T-shirt. I don't know what time that is.
I like that color.
Yeah, I don't know.
It
pops, doesn't it? It draws attention to it, which is really cool.
Yeah. A bunch of women and guns
and
together.
And also we're doing a
attention
press
anyway,
conference.
So, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah. We're doing a press conference on Tuesday.
Okay.
At the Marcello 4401A Ballroom at 11. Like I said, I'll list all this there. So if anyone's going,
if you have video,
stop by.
You know, you can put videos of the press conference. So I'd be, what kind of questions do they ask you guys? What kind of questions is the press asking for maybe other press conferences? What do they want to know?
I haven't been at a press conference. This is going to be my first year.
Oh, okay. Well,
but
are
as far
there any
as
other
local,
times? That,
local,
yeah. Go ahead.
As far as locally, they want to know, you know, what's the draw for women to come to learn how to shoot a firearm? Why are there so many women purchasing firearms? What's the draw now? And it comes back to, like we're telling Alan, this one now it's for self-defense. A lot of women just want to feel that they can defend themselves and be their own first responder. Because they understand that in the world today, things aren't like they used to be.
They used to be that way either. I think it was a myth. I think things weren't talked about as much. You know, like we think there's a lot of child abuse out there because we talk about the child abuse openly, that the horrible things are happening to kids. I think those things were always happening to kids. It just was kind of suppressed, you know, the crazy uncle kind of thing, you know. And so now we're talking about things that we never talked about. And so it's not that the problem necessarily is worse. We're dealing with it, but because we're dealing with it, it seems more open. But if, you know, Alan asked me why he asked me, do I carry a gun? I said, yes, I do. You know, and he says, why? You know, why do you think you need a gun? I said, that's not the question. You know, I said, the biggest reason is because I want to be a free man. You know, I want to exercise my rights. I want to have the symbol of my freedom, the implement of my freedom, the means of my freedom if I ever have to defend myself. So I said, for me, really, just the fact I want to do it just because I can, because that's I want that experience of being a free person. And I imagine a lot of women feel exactly the same way. You don't have to have a reason to do it other than you can. We're in a country where you can do that. And most countries, almost all the countries, can't do that. Something
exactly.
I want to change.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't understand that, you know, our country was based on God, country, and family. And mm-hmm. it was based on the ability for each of us to be able to have freedoms. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why America became American. That's where our forefathers were. That's where their mindset was on freedom and holding that freedom. And a lot of this also, you know, firearms and the Second Amendment is to keep the government for the people, not mm-hmm. for themselves. And so, you know, that all this kind of is, I think, like you said, it wasn't talked about. And then all of a sudden it's just like expanding now. Because, and also we have all these illegal people coming into the country.
Oh yeah.
Not all of them are law-abiding citizens. Crime rates are going
well,
up
none of
even
them.
Here.
None of them are. If they're coming to the country illegally, none of them are law-abiding citizens.
Well, that's true. You got a point there. If they wanted to do it legally, they would.
If they came to the country illegally,
all these numbers.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you can see crime around here going up, even in areas where you go, oh, you know. That doesn't happen down here. Oh, yeah, it happens down here. We have gangs. We have sex trafficking. And like you said, the media wouldn't cover it, but it's there. It's just coming out in the open because people are talking about it.
You know, women carrying guns keeps everybody safer. You know, men carrying guns keeps everybody safer. I'm talking law-abiding citizens. You know, and so all of us contributing, it's almost like a civic responsibility. You know, I'm a healthy guy, you know, I'm over 6 foot, you know, to me, it's my part of my social responsibility to carry a gun. And you talk to liberals and their head would explode at that thought. I said, wait a minute. I mean, who is responsible for our safety? The police have been determined by the courts over and over and over again to be a societal deterrent, not an individual rescue service. They don't have to answer the call to you. You know, all they're responsible for is arresting the criminals later, and you know, maybe, you know. So it's a very strange thing. I mean, we call the police when we have an emergency, but we used to be much more self-reliant. You know, and so you are your own first responder, whether you want to be or not. The only question is how are you prepared to be your own first responder? I think that's more the question. I think women are taking on the side of it, and they're realizing that they want to be prepared to be their own first responder. Does that make sense?
It does. You know, law enforcement. I look at them as they're coming after the crime to figure out what happened and try to solve it and deter someone else from doing it, because normally it's going to be all said and done by the time they get there in most cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think firearms are a good way for women to be able to defend themselves. You take lessons just like you would if you were doing hand-to-hand. Hand-to-hand, mm-hmm. you have to really become more advanced to take on a person that's larger than you, you know, you really have to have that motor skill down. And mm-hmm. you still do that in firearms, but you don't have to have as much strength, because a lot of women are, as they get older, they, you know, like anyone, you lose a little bit of your strength and ability to defend yourself or run fast. Right now.
Yeah,
I'm
your speed, everything.
Fast,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, this is why they call it the equalizer, you know, the whole Sam Colt. You know, they call the gun the equalizer because, you know, there was a saying, you know, whether taller or shorter or whatever it was, you know, call on me and I will no matter what the size, you know, call on me, I will equalize. I heard that. I think Tom Selleck said that in a movie sometime. But here's a question for you. And I got Derek. We're going to talk money here in just a bit, which you're welcome to hang around for. You got a little bit you sort of got shortchanged a bit on your report, but at least you got to talk to Alan, which is very cool. But
that's
something
right.
I was
that's
just
fine.
Okay, good. And you're welcome to stay as long as you want in the show. And this is the beauty of Action Radio. I'm the boss. I can make the rules. So you want to stick around? Stick around. If you have to go, you have to go. It's no problem. Just, you know, we'll get your contact information in a second here just to make sure if you do have to go, we don't miss doing that. But I was just thinking, as we're talking about women and guns, you know, in the 1800s, you know, when families were crossing the, you know, the Great Plains and the Conestoga wagons, or when people had homesteads or they built their log cabins, or any of the pioneers, you know, the idea that women weren't aware and using and defending their family with guns, you know, if the guy was out trapping or working the range or the ranch or driving cattle or whatever, you know, they were doing, the idea that women wouldn't know how to use guns, to me, it would be crazy, because you're losing half your defense force for the family. So who's protecting the kids, you know, if the guy's out doing stuff, if only the men are handling guns, that makes no sense. So there's probably a huge tradition of women and firearms in the 1700s and 1800s that maybe you could explore, or it's maybe been explored already. I don't know. But you think that's an avenue that might be interesting for you guys to take a look at?
Oh, definitely. And I'll check and see what I can find out about it. But I'm sure they didn't sit there with, you know, like a ladle or something like that, going to defend their kids if someone, you know, or animal or bear comes and attacks, or some bad guy comes in. They're not going to start, you know, they're going to have a firearm. They probably had a shotgun or a rifle. Most cases, I'm guessing it was a shotgun or a rifle.
Yeah. Or in the older days, it had a musket or a rifle barrel, like a Kentucky rifle, a hunting rifle, something like that.
Depends on how far back you're going.
I was going way back. I was going back to the beginning. You know, 1700s, yeah.
So, I'm sure they had some form of firearm to defend their family and their home. Because, you know, like you said, when they went out hunting, men went out hunting, they just didn't go out for a few hours. They went out for probably days before they came back with something. You know, they had, it wasn't like you jump in the car and drive there.
You don't drive to the hunting range, you know, throw the deer on the hood of your car and drive home. Yeah, this is, you know, this is horseback and all that kind of stuff, you know. Interesting.
Exactly. Okay. So it's a little slower.
It'd be great. I'm going to put a little note to myself here for next week. Women and guns in the 1800s. If you're interested in looking into that, it might be kind of fun to talk about. Oh, I can't get my calendar here. Let's do women and guns.
Let me see what I can find out.
And guns. And I'll put a little note in, you know, 1800s. See, projects here. So I have projects too. I mean, let me bring on Derek. Let's get your contact information first. DC Project. Anything else?
Oh, so if you're interested, you can go to dcproject.info. If you're interested in participating or joining us and becoming a delegate of any of the states, I'm also looking for delegates in Florida. And there you go. We're on Facebook. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram as well, dcproject.info.
Okay. And you're going to be offering gun classes again at some point soon here, or do you know when?
I am starting, February. I started putting in classes, reserving the bay and stuff, because I'm ready to go.
There you go. Got contact
I'm one
information
way or another,
for your.
I'm going to be out there.
Yeah. Do you have contact information for your shooting classes that you can give out, or you want to, is that just locally done?
No. I can give you that.
We don't have to do it now. You want to do it next week? You know, find out what public information you want to share with, you know, Azerbaijan and Japan and Russia and all our listeners around the world.
Real quick, you can either email me at shirleywatchell@gmail.com or follow me. Yeah, I have a website, shirleywatchell.com. And my phone number would be 941-677-3377. If anyone's interested, give me a call.
You might get a lot of phone calls. I would stick with the website. But that's okay. If it works out, that's fine. I mean, you're certainly welcome to give out the information. I just want to, we got a pretty, you know, this show's going to be growing pretty big here soon. So hopefully you don't get, well, of course, maybe a lot of calls would be a good thing. All right, let's get Derek on. And you're welcome to stick around. We're going to talk economics and finances and the markets and things like that. But thank you for calling. This is great. You know, glad to have you as part of our Friday show.
I'm honored to be a part of it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Let's talk money.
Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Morning. How you doing?
We're having a great time here. We got Shirley still on the line, too, if you have any questions or comments for her Women and Guns, SHOT Show, things like that. So feel free. Or we can leap right into the financial world and get going with that.
Gotcha. Well, I'm pretty much a gun connoisseur and carrier myself, so I'm pretty well versed.
There you go. See, Shirley, you're among friends. We just got to work on Alan in Belize.
We need to get him over here and take him to the range.
Yes. So we had, just to get you caught up, Derek, we had Alan Dawson, a friend of mine, tour guide. He calls in. We got our Skype line working really well now, so he calls in from Belize. He's on a COVID quarantine right now, but at least they have ivermectin there so he can get that knocked out of his system. But they don't have guns in Belize, so we're going to bring him up here and maybe get him to someplace where he can rent a fully automatic, M16-style gun. I think it'd be kind of – I want to do that myself,
sure.
Too. That's another cool thing. All right. So let's get into the financial stuff then, and let's see what's because there's the economy sucks. Bidenomics. Has anybody used the term Bidenomics? I just thought of that now. Is anybody saying that?
They've said it. I've seen it before.
Okay, all right. So I'm not original. I got to give credit where credit's due. I just thought of it. All right, let's go to the report, and then we'll dig into the details. Yeah, go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
We're in a little bit of a struggle, but we'll do the report and we'll talk about it. Good morning. This is Derek Park of Ever Jones bringing you the Daily Financial Market Report. Major indexes paired early gains and turned negative with sell-off intensifying into the afternoon, which follows a turbulent start for the year. Technology is again under pressure with the NASDAQ losing more than 2%. Investors are likely fearing that the reports of 4 rate hikes in 2022 and growing Omicron cases will see a slowdown in GDP growth and weight on multiple tech companies. The U.S. 10-year yield was down to 1.69%, but we think it will move towards 2% over the next few months as we approach the increase in target interest rates with the Federal Reserve Bank. European and Asian markets were mixed. U.S. equities closed lower with the Dow Jones down 175 points or 0.48% to 36,115. NASDAQ Composite closed down 382 points or 2.51% to 14,807. And the S&P 500 index closed down 67 points or 1.4% to 46.59. In the bond market, the 10-year treasuries are trading at 1.7%, lower by 0.02. In the commodity markets, price of crude oil was down $1.12 or 1.36% to $81.52, and the spot price of gold was down $6 or 0.35 to $18.2090. This is Derek Park of Ever Jones, member SIPC. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
Wow, so much to talk about. And Shirley, you're welcome to ask questions too. So, as long as you're on the show and you can stick around, feel free to leap into our conversation. Let's go to oil as the first thing. I'm going to kind of work backwards. So we'll get to the techs and market stocks in a bit. But oil, even though you said it was down to 81, I mean, I think the last time we talked, it was 79 something. So it may be down now, but the trend is still rising, right? Is there an oil trend over the last, I don't know, the Biden economic oil increase? The last year or so, or at least the last 6 months. Anybody looking at a trend in oil prices?
I don't want to say really, but not really. Oil seems to be hovering right around 78 to 83. That's kind of, I guess I want to call it the happy place for oil.
What makes it happy? I love your scientific terms, happy. By the way, so keep them up, yeah.
The happy term is really that's where the oil companies are making money, so they're happy. And the price point at the pump is, on the high side, but, negotiable.
$3
really the
kind of thing or what?
What's
the happy place for consumers?
Probably about $2.75, average is about where you're going to want to be. You start getting over the $3 mark, then people start to tend to say, hey, that's starting to get high.
Yeah, we're not happy.
So really, yeah, exactly. So that's why I was calling it the happy place.
it makes perfect sense. I mean, I was joking with the scientific terminology, but that actually is extremely accurate. because so much of the economy, people don't realize it's culture, it's feelings, it's emotions. There's a lot of things. It's not just numbers. That's one of the things that Dr. Walter Williams pointed out in one of my favorite all-time interviews, one of my first ones too. He says, I said, what's different about what you teach at George Mason University for economics? He says, we teach real economics, not just numbers. You know, and there's feelings, there's impressions, there's, you know, future ideas, there's expectations. You guys are always talking about, you know, companies or things that meet or don't meet expectations. So there's so much that goes into this that is cultural, that is emotional, that is not just the actual physical numbers. And I think people miss that a lot of times. And that's why I like to bring a lot of these things into our discussions. So the idea of a happy place, you know, for the oil companies and the consumers, that's a good thing. What's the government's happy place? Not that I care, but just for being, you know, thorough. Do they have a happy place?
I'm not sure where that would be, but, you know, as long as they're getting, I guess, their taxes and stuff on it, you know, I mean, I guess I'd have to do a little bit more research to see where the government would like oil to stay.
Well, maybe you got a point there. The fact that their happy place is taxes. You know, the gas taxes, mm-hmm. their excise taxes, their pollution, you know, and like California has like a gazillion taxes. I think it's like $1.50 plus of a gallon of California gas is strictly taxed because they put state taxes on top of the federal tax. Which brings the next question with this push for electric cars. That's going to drop their gas taxes because electric cars don't burn gasoline.
Oh, yeah.
Therefore.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So
yeah.
Have they anticipated this little... what we call unanticipated consequences. If they're pushing everybody into electric cars, they're not going to have a gas tax.
I'm not really sure. They'll find a way to tax the batteries. I'm sure
Well, that's what I'm wondering. You know, are they going to? Is there going to be an additional power tax?
Have you seen the proposal for taxing solar panels now out in California?
No, but that doesn't surprise me. Tell me about it. What are they saying?
I briefly read the article, but it was in California, they're talking about anybody who has solar panels charging a state tax of $8 per kilowatt hour, support the buyback program or whatever it was. you're trying to be energy efficient, and yet the state's going to punish you for it, you know, so... it's kind of crazy. So a lot of people are not real happy about it, obviously. And already in California, I think it was PG&E and one of the other power companies basically changed their rules for their buyback for their solar. So what mm-hmm. happens was, you know, these people put their solar panels on and essentially cut their power bill down to about $50 a month. And mm-hmm. then after these solar panels, they change the rates at which they buy the power back, so their power bill jumped back up to $200 a month.
Yeah,
so
that sounds
the
about
solar,
right.
The solar panels became basically counterproductive, in the fact that you had it on there. So what the power company is doing, because they feel their pocket's getting thin, is finding ways to charge you. So what's going on here in Florida is what they're doing is a tier power system. So basically they took the averages of all the power and said, okay, we're going to put the mark right under, where the tier is to where the average is. And they say, okay, if you're going to use X amount of power, which is really hard to hit, you're going to save a lot of money. You know what I mean? It basically, if you keep your air conditioner off or your heater off, you know, you're going to meet this mark. But if you run your air conditioner, your heater, you're going to pay a little bit more like everybody else. And then, you know, for people that you really use a lot of power, they put that bracket so tight that you tear up very, very quickly.
That's hysterical. Shirley, I'm going to bring her in because she's still, you know, do you do you know anything about it, this kind of stuff? It's like you do the right thing by conserving and then they increase your power costs. You do the right thing by putting solar, and I agree with solar panels. I think they're a great idea. But you put solar panels, you make the investment so that you can actually generate your own electricity, and then the power companies charge you more. What's the point of conservation? Shirley, go ahead.
I know. It just shocked me. I didn't know that. I thought, that is insane. So you try to do something good, and, yeah, because I guess it's always the money. It's all about the money, right? All the money.
Well, this is it. Yeah. And this is why I don't, when I hear about conservation programs or buying electric or, you know, when people start driving smaller cars, which is California went, well, let's be energy efficient, drive smaller cars. Well, the gas revenues went down because people were, you know, buying, you know, fewer gallons because they didn't need them because they had smaller cars, right? So the gas tax revenue goes down. So what does California do? They raise the gas tax. So Derek, so the question for you overall, does government in your experience have like or government regulated utilities like power companies, do they have, you know, an ever increasing graduated amount of money they think they have to make? And, you know, if with conservation measures or special programs or like tax reimbursements, like you buy a Tesla, used to get a like $10,000-$20,000 reimbursements. Everybody bought Teslas, but now they're running electric cars, so they're not using gasoline. You know, are there thresholds that these people – are there expectations, in other words, that government's going to make so much revenue from gas taxes, or they can make so much revenue from, you know, from the utility tax on electricity, you know, and then if people start conserving, their expectations won't be met. You know, is there a connection there with what's going on in the markets in terms of tax expectations, for example, or public utilities?
I'd have to go look because I haven't looked specifically for, you know, government's tax expectations. You know, I mean, if the government...
Do they have them? I don't know. I'm just making this up. No.
If the government has some type of listed tax expectation, that would mean that they're trying to aim for targets for, you know, making money and spending. And it would basically, everybody knows it's kind of the white elephant that the you know, the United States government is a giant business, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's we know it. It's just not said. That would
especially
just basically
COVID.
Certify that comment. You know what I mean? It would be like, okay, well, that means you're not hitting your price targets, which means, golly, why doesn't the U.S. government start selling stock and, you know, hey, we didn't meet earnings this year, so, you know, the stock tumbles, you know? So,
well, this is kind of my discussion. This is why I go on these long rants because, you know, as I'm talking, things come out. And it seems to me, I mean, I was sort of half joking about that, but, you know, if you look at, I think you're absolutely right. If you look at the government as a corporation or public utilities are a corporation, but they're also governed by the government, I didn't think of this before, but I guess they do have expectations of revenue. And if they want you to conserve and you actually do conserve and they lose money, they're going to raise your taxes anyway, defeating the purpose of conserving because they've got expectations.
Isn't it
what
just like a budget? I mean, if you Shirley, expect to get so much money in X number of type of tax and you're budgeting that to do whatever, and all of a sudden that money's not there, you have to figure out a way to get it somewhere else. Like you said, it is a business.
Especially
know,
if you're spending the money.
Budget.
Yeah. Especially if you're spending the money in advance based on anticipated revenue. You know, that's what they do with these spending bills and raising the debt ceiling.
As the population grows, more people are meeting the workforce. You know,
okay.
I mean, we've talked about this before, Craig, but, you know, inflation is a good thing for the government. You know what I mean? They make more money.
Oh, they
you
love
know,
it.
There's higher taxes, there's higher prices, you know, but I mean, obviously the public doesn't love it. So what happens is that you know, it'll get to a point where it becomes counterproductive. So the government will let it go on for enough, you know, before they're like, okay, we're going to go ahead and get involved. You know, so I mean, the Fed basically has let inflation go on. We could honestly say for a full year, maybe push a year and a half, you know,
it wasn't going to go on. We were going to work our way out of it with Bidenomics, which obviously didn't happen.
Right.
So
right.
Tell me about,
well, I mean,
think about that. This,
you and
this
I even
yeah.
had the same conversation on, you know, on this thing, you know, I mean, when they were saying
yep.
it was transitory, I was saying bull crap, you know,
yeah,
what I mean? there's no way it's transitory.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the market right now is throwing a little bit of a temper tantrum. You know, I mean, we've had a temper tantrum for the past 2 or 3 months, you know, so, you know, I mean, it's all based on inflation. It's based on Omicron. It's based on, you know, the effects of, you know, what
Omicron's
a new virus
cold.
Is going to do to our economy.
Omicron's cold.
You know,
it
is, but people panic. You know, the news is very good at making people panic.
Oh,
you know, so you, we also have,
you know, possible rate hikes that are coming, you know, that are going to have an impact on the economy. So
let's
typically
talk about that.
I mean, if you look at it, you know, you've got a major in economics, so you understand this. The bottom line is, is inflation rises and the Fed starts raising the rate, ideally people will start saving money, which means the shelves will start filling up, right? When the shelves start filling up, then companies are going to start posting profit misses, which means that's contraction, right? Well, what comes with that? It's called a recession. You know,
And this is the thing people don't understand. A recession is the cure for inflation. And they're both bad. Inflation's bad.
Yeah.
The cure is, the medicine is as bad as the disease. You know, look at Paul Volcker in the 80s. I mean, he just killed the economy to save it. You know, I mean, his interest rates were really high, but we had 20% inflation. I mean, you know, it was great for CDs. People are buying CDs like crazy and getting ridiculous amounts of income, you know. But as we've talked about before, and surely as someone who's probably not an economist, you know, I'm always interested in people that aren't expert. Oh, she said that she left. Okay, so she had to go. We'll get her next time. But for people that aren't economists, you know, they're looking at this and they're trying to make sense of it. You know, they think inflation, well, that means the prices are going up. No, it means the government spent too much money and printed too much. Oh, okay. Well, I don't want a recession because that means the economy is going down. Well, yeah, but it's almost the inflation creates the need for the recession to kill the inflation. So knowing that, why would you ever create inflation? And yet they keep doing it. Well, because they want to spend money. You know, so there's this vicious cycle, you know, but people, but now, so what's going on? So let's take Jerome Powell. He's got a great radio voice, by the way. He should be on our show. But the Fed, you know, you're saying transitory. So that's what they actually, the word they're using. So for about a year, they've been talking about inflation as not being real. And yet they knew, because they're not stupid, they knew what you and I knew, that the underlying, you know, causes weren't going away. In fact, they were getting worse. So all the indicators were that inflation was getting worse. There was nothing to indicate, there was nothing that would have changed that. So when they said that it was transitory, they were lying, and they knew they were lying. So why would they do that?
Yeah. I mean, I think they're trying to keep the public calm. You know, I mean, inflation, when people hear the word inflation, you know, I mean, there normally comes panic along with it. You know, I mean, but, you know, if you sit there and calm people and you tell them, well, you know, I mean, it's kind of a byproduct. I mean, I don't do that when I talk to my clients. I just basically give them the real. I say, okay, what comes along with inflation and all of this stuff? You know what I mean? Like, that means we're going to have to work harder in the market to achieve the same returns, right? You know, are you willing to take that kind of risk? You know, and a lot of people, when they start seeing markets get shaky, they're not nearly as risky as they thought they were. You know, so everybody's like, oh, yeah. You know, I mean, like, swing for the fences, man, aim for the moon. Don't worry, it's going to go up and down. And then, you know, I mean, I'll talk to them, you know, 6 months later, and they'll be like, man, you know, I'm really seeing this thing taking a beating. Well, I mean, are you as risky as you said you were? You know, I mean, like, I start having those same conversations with people. And I mean, you know, it's absolutely normal, you know, to see the markets go up and down. Inflation for where we're at right now, I don't want to call it normal. It is a little bit outside of the normal, but ideally it's where we are and it's what we have to deal with. So how do we react to it? You know, I mean, you just prepare for market volatility and be prepared to invest. I mean, really, that's it. That's the only thing that you have in your kit bag, you know, to prepare for this with an investing standpoint. You know, I mean, obviously as a person, I mean, you know, when things start getting more expensive, I mean, you have to, some people have to make personal decisions. But what the economy is telling us right now, 7% inflation, I mean, nobody has slowed down yet. You know what I mean? Basically the economy is telling us that 7% inflation is okay because people have too much money. You know, so what that means is the government has to tighten the money supply. So raising the interest rates, I think, for the first 6 months is going to have a very nominal impact on inflation.
Yeah. And the idea that people have too much money that or they're spending too much is ludicrous. This makes no sense. After a COVID lockdown economy and all the businesses that were lost and all the fortunes that were lost and all the money that was lost, the idea that, you know, there's all this money out there chasing all these goods is irrational. That doesn't make any sense. You know, the problem with the goods is the supply chain. That's why we don't have goods on the shelves, you know. But It's just they never deal honestly with people. If you just told people that all those goodies that you got, all that that money that was spent on you being paid to stay home, and all the stimulus money and all the money they wanted to spend on Build Back Better, that fortunately, you know, Manchin and Sinema said, I don't think so. You know, that would have caused even more inflation and more printed money and more devalued currency. You know, people, I think the stat came up from One American News that people are losing about 2.5%. In wages this year, simply because although they've gotten a slight increase in wages, and I guess a lot of that's with the minimum wage, it's all being eaten up with inflation, so you're net losing. So it doesn't matter how much you're getting of a wage increase, because you're going to lose more than that, because your money's devalued 7%. Well, so then
again,
you get 93 cents on the dollar. Yeah.
When the government's reporting this stuff, it's a lagging indicator. It's already happening, and it's already embedded. You know, by the time they're like, you know, hey, we're having pretty severe inflation. Well, thanks, Captain Obvious. You know, it's our,
yeah.
You know.
I was at the market yesterday, I know.
On.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not just that. I mean, that's their reaction to it. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So, you know, the market, I mean, and I think the market's probably going to take another beating today. You know, so, you know, it's the nature of the beast. You report bad news, investors get scared. You know, investors.
Well, why didn't they know
this
ahead of time? We knew this a year ago. This was coming. We knew this a year ago. This was coming. You know, so why is the market surprised?
A long time ago, you know, I mean, I started talking to him and saying, hey, toward the end of the year, expect some volatility. You know, I mean, are you comfortable with that? Are you comfortable with where your portfolio is? And again, that goes back to right what I said before. Everybody was risky when everything was going great, you know, but back in November, you know, I mean, everything was fine in November. I mean, mm-hmm. we went through a little bit of volatility in the beginning of the year. And then mm-hmm. starting in the end of November, I mean, the market has just done nothing but kind of trickle down. So we've seen about 8 weeks of we're probably, I guess, at about a 6 to 8% loss across the board right now.
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah, remember when I guess 6 months ago, you and I were talking, and I kept asking you, why is the market so high? We're in a terrible economic situation here. We've got inflation. We've got too much spending. We've got energy is gone. You know, energy really is a huge factor in the economy. So the fact that the truckers aren't driving, the fact that oil and gas is ridiculously expensive, you know, and all these things are happening, you know, and we knew this. We knew the market. I said, how can the market be up? I said, and this is why I asked you, why aren't the writers writing about this? Why aren't the financial analysts saying, look, this can't go on like this. Sooner or later, you know, the as you say, a lagging indicator, it's gonna come up. But we already knew it. So what made us so smart? We're just looking at the obvious, looking at the underlying you know, moving factors of the economy. I forgot what you call those things. But, you know, look at prices, inflation, energy, you know, all the factors that go into, you know, making up the financial markets and the economy. And we could see very clearly where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
What made us so smart? You know, why are people panicking on news that we knew 6 months to a year ago? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Because that's what people do. You know, nobody calls the investor. Nobody calls the investor when they're up 20% and says, wow, this looks great. They wait until they're down 5% and then they call the investor and be like, man, this is terrible. What are we going to do about it?
Oh, I'd say buying opportunity, but that's just me, and I'm not a financial advisor.
Well, of course, that's what I say. I'm like, well, typically I don't look for a buying opportunity until we're a full 10% or below.
Okay.
You know, I mean, 5%, 5 to 6% comes around all the time. You know, I mean, if you start throwing your money at the problem then and the market continues down, then you lose a little bit of buying power. So 5%, I mean, you know, I mean, the market can recover from this in you know, another month. So I'm kind of not worried about it. You know, when we start going 10%, if the downtick continues, then you have concerns of what is trending. What is it that's making it happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to say that we can't have a recession right now, but it's very highly unlikely. You know, so, you know, obviously
you're saying recession is unlikely? Why is recession unlikely?
Where we're at right now?
Yeah.
We just come out of a Christmas quarter, man. So, you know, when they report the quarter, do you think it's going to be negative GDP?
Oh, that's, yeah. I'm looking at underlying causes. I'm looking at all the effects. You know, I think recession is inevitable. I think they're going to have to create one to break the inflation cycle.
Not this quarter. you know, my personal opinion that you'd be looking after the summer before any of that stuff start to happen. You'd have to see how the first rate hike is going to cause, you know, turmoil in the market. You know, it might already be baked in. You know what I mean? Like that's something that you need to keep as concern. I mean, really, you know, and I said this before, I don't think the Fed should have lowered below 1%. I think they should have went to 1% and left everything right about there. And that kind of would have worked itself out. I'm sure there's a lot of other mitigating circumstances. I'm just talking about Fed funds rate, that would have kind of left us in a better position.
But that wouldn't have been good for Brandon. You know, he would have had a slower economy. I think they're trying to. I think the Fed is political. You know, they seem to raise rates when Trump had a booming economy. The first thing they did was bring all the rates up, you know, to slow down Trump's booming economy because you couldn't have him looking good. And with Brandon and Obama too, same thing. I mean, the Obama interest rates were zero because his economy sucked. He had no underlying factors that would raise it up. He was doing all the wrong stuff, all the things that Brandon's doing: too much spending, controlling the energy, you know, too many regulations, stupid regulations. It's like everything that Obama did wrong, you know, Brandon's doing wrong on steroids. You know, and yet expecting a different result, or at least he's so insane that he's believing. You know, this is the greatest economy. We got more people at work now than we had last year. Well, of course you do, stupid, because you had lockdowns last year, idiot. You know, so speaking of Captain Obvious, I love that expression. I'm going to steal that. But this is,
I hate to cut you short, but I got an early morning appointment, so I gotta just use my time and go this morning.
Okay, that's fine. Jim's on the line already, so we're good. And I got to read something anyway from Florida Carey. So, yeah, give your contact information again. Have a good week, and we'll talk next week about whatever I wrote down here in my notes for you.
Yeah, well, I went over your thing you messaged me, so we can do it next week.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, thanks again. This is Derek Park with Edward Jones. If you need to get a hold of me, it's 850-995-0082. You guys have a nice day.
Thanks, Derek. Appreciate it. Great chat. Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. And now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment as written a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dykes with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio. All right, so I never got a chance to do this earlier. I was planning to, but Alan Dawson called us from Belize, and I keep thinking it's going to be a half-hour chat, but we're on for an hour. Of course, everybody wants to know things like, you know, what's for lunch in Belize today? Stupid stuff. So, plus a really great philosophical discussion, so we had fun. So I never got to read the letter from open letter from Florida to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis from the Board of Directors of Florida Carry. So first of all, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Hopefully the mic ends up sounding a little bit better today. I have a new computer that I'm trying out.
Ooh. Yeah, it sounds great. It sounds great. I just want to take a couple minutes and read this letter because I never got a chance to, but I know you want to react to it. And I'm curious what you think because this is a good letter. And so for those who don't know, you can go to, I guess it's the Gun Writer, and I'm sure it's posted in different places. I have it on our Action Radio Gun Group, but it's from the Florida Board of Directors of Florida Carry Incorporated. And I've got Lee Williams Gun Writer, which I now subscribe to. And it says, we support constitutional carry statutes and statute and salute the states that have passed them. That's the Republican National Committee platform, which is great, but here's what's going on in Florida. So the letter goes on. It says, Governor DeSantis, frankly, sir, we're tired of waiting. We're tired of hearing empty promises and accepting compromises by pseudo-Republicans. We're tired of donor money from the likes of Al Hoffman, I'm not sure who that is, and Mike Fernandez, or him either, actually, who benefit from gated communities and private security, standing in the way of the Constitution. We're tired of seeing constitutional and open carry bills dying in committee, not by anti-gun Democrats' actions, but by allegedly pro-Constitution Republican inaction. In short, we're tired of seeing the right to keep and bear arms in Florida relegated to a mere licensed privilege. It's time to move on. Let's take this paragraph by paragraph. That's really good. You guys are mad. What's going on? I'm excited. Excellent.
So a little context for you, since you you said you don't know who Al Hoffman and Mike Fernandez are.
Yeah.
They are two of the largest, probably the two largest donors to the Republican Party in Florida. They both live in South Florida. And the two of them, back when the Parkland bill passed in Florida, publicly stated that they would no longer donate any money to any Republican who did not support gun control in Florida.
Oh, in other words, violating the Constitution. Fascinating.
And that's actually when we started seeing the huge shift within the legislature in Florida. And we learned, as we thought and hoped was not true, that the Republicans in the legislature cared more about the donor funds and getting reelected than they did their oath to honor the Constitution.
How about that? What a surprise. You know, this is why I created Action Radio, is to be the counterforce to those donors. I mean, this is exactly why I created Action Radio, so that if we can get enough people with enough votes and enough media, enough pissed off Americans, that we can counter that. We have to make our votes more valuable and more costly to these Republicans than their dollars. That's really what it comes down to.
You're right. Yeah, it is. The only thing that the overwhelming majority of politicians on both sides of the aisle care about is getting reelected and maintaining power.
Mm-hmm. So we take away the power. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. Until you demonstrate that you are capable of removing them from office, they will issue platitudes, but will really not do anything to help you. The only time that they will help you is if they think that you move the needle significantly in their direction to get them either elected or reelected.
Yeah. I had an interesting thought the other day that it'd be interesting if we get as successful as I hope we do at Action Radio with, you know, multi-millions of listeners and can have the kind of impact I think that citizen legislation can have, that the elections actually become more votes on the laws that are proposed rather than the people. So we're too personality driven now. It'd be interesting if, you know, say we wrote or Florida Carry wrote an open carry constitutional bill, and that bill became the issue. And the question was, are the candidates for it or against it, as opposed to, do you want, you know, Joe Smith because, you know, he's got a nice background, academic, you know, veteran, all the other kind of stuff. He'll support you. He believes in you, but he's still taking money from Al Hoff and Mike Fernandez, you know, to put gun control while saying, I'm an American first. I believe in the Constitution. I'm going to do what I can to safeguard your rights. And then they get there, and of course they do what they normally do, which is, you know, kowtow to their donors. That's what I'm hoping. Laws over personalities.
Yeah, and, you know, there was a push to try to do some of that when they put term limits in place. Mm-hmm. What we've found with term limits is you still have lifetime politicians in Florida. They just term limit out in the Senate and then bounce back to the House for a term and then pop back into the Senate.
Yeah. See, I think term limits is one of those false, I forgot what it's called, but there's, I'm sure that was proposed by politicians to maintain their corruption, just as the whole party structure. The Democrats and Republicans are about maintaining power and giving you the choices they want you to vote for. So they still win in the end. I mean, that's how you got, you know, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. Okay, the deep state got together and said, well, these are the two candidates. We're going to pick the winner ahead of time. And those are your choices. And that's why Trump was so fascinating and so disruptive. He's got a big rally Saturday. So I'm curious to hear what's going on there. But it's, you know, the power of these people and the things that they say, I want to take this away from the personalities involved. I want to make this about the laws and term limits. You know, whether you have, you know, one politician serving for 20 years, you know, two for 10 each, or four for five each, you know, there's no reason to assume that the four that serve for 5 years are any less corrupt than the one that serves for 20, because they're still the same donors. So the donors don't change. If the election doesn't change, if the power relationship between votes and dollars doesn't change, why would you assume that term limits would have any difference if you're not changing the factors that really count? I mean, that's how I see it.
Yeah, I think you're definitely going down the right track with that train of thought. As always, the implementation is the difficult part to fix it.
No kidding. But, I can write the bills, but I can lead the people to the bills, but I can't make them think. You know, lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. Same philosophy.
Right. Having politicians vote themselves out of power is never going to happen. So it becomes a challenge.
Yeah. Well, here's what's so fascinating, too, and I reported in our little group chat that I'm in contact with people in Australia, New Zealand, and Israel right now in terms of activism. And I want to show them what we do, you know, and if this catches on around the world, it might be interesting to have it come back to the United States, kind of like the Clint Eastwood, you know, Western, you know, where he wasn't going anywhere in Hollywood. Hollywood didn't care about him. You know, he wanted to be a big star, and he wasn't going to be a big star in Hollywood. They thought, you know, who are you? So he goes to Italy, makes, you know, The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, A Fistful of Dollars, and A Few Dollars More, three of my favorite films, especially focused on, like, some guy's left ear, something really personal, or some guy's eyeball is all bloodshot. I mean, they're amazing movies, right? But he became a star in Italy, and then he came back to the United States. And there's a possibility that Action Radio may be more actionable in other countries before it comes here, which is kind of ironic, being the land of the free and the home of the brave, allegedly. In terms of, at least, you know, government notwithstanding, trying to make us the land of Marxism and the home of the politically correct. So, I'll keep you posted, but there's going to be some, I'll keep everybody's listening posted too, but there's some interesting stuff happening with our connections around the world. And I'm going to, because we got a Skype line now, I can get them all on the show at once. I can get Israel, New Zealand, and Australia on the show all at the same time, talking to each other as activists. So that's what's coming, Jim.
That's great.
What do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We just keep breaking the rules and making our own. Let's get the next paragraph here. In 1987, Florida led the nation into the age of shall issue, its new statewide licensing program for concealed carry licenses. In just a few short years, half the nation joined Florida in that small but important step towards the reinstatement of the right to keep and bear arms. No state that has adopted shall issue has either rescinded or regretted that legislation. We were good in 1987. Jim, what happened? How did we lose our way?
Yeah, we started a steady decline right after shall issue became the law in Florida. You know, we were at that point leading the way and probably one of the top one or two states in the nation in terms of protecting the right to keep and bear arms. Mm-hmm. Now I would contend we're in the bottom half in the nation. So it's been a combination of complacency. I think in the beginning, a lot of it was complacency with gun owners in Florida. You know, when you have things relatively going well in relation to the rest of the country, mm-hmm. you really kind of take your eye off the ball and don't really pay attention or care to what's going on in the legislature. And things slowly started being chipped away. And then, you know, around the time of the Parkland bill, things really started to get bad. You had a lot of South Florida Republicans and Republicans in the Tampa area who were becoming less and less pro-gun, whether that was because of their own beliefs or, as I think, because they believed that their constituents who were coming in largely from the Northeast and the West were less pro-gun. They started voting less and less because, again, what they care about is getting reelected. And then, as I mentioned earlier, when the Parkland bill happened, you had the two largest donors to the Republican Party in the state of Florida taking what was clearly an anti-gun position. And about that same time, Bloomberg decided that he was going to start pouring money into Florida to try to make Florida an anti-gun state. So you had millions of dollars coming in from Bloomberg to influence elections to put anti-gun representatives in place, and the two largest Republican donors in Florida withholding funds from pro-gun legislators. And you end up what we have now with Florida in the bottom half of the states in terms of gun rights.
Crazy. Shirley Wachtel's back with us. I'm going to bring her on in just a second here. She actually called in early, got to talk to Alan Dawson from Belize. This has been a really fun day. I love Fridays around here. We have way too much fun with everybody joining in. And, of course, that's, my policy is very simple. Any reporter can call anytime to anybody else's report. Feel free. And stick around for a while, too, because it gets interesting when we have all you wonderful people talking to each other. But I got a question for you first, though. It seems to me that they use these horrible tragedies, these mass murders, like Stoneman Douglas. You know, and I've argued this on the show many, many times, not in just your report, but all the reports we have, that you cannot base the rights of the law-abiding on the actions of criminals, that the Second Amendment has nothing to do with criminals. It's the right of the law-abiding to keep and bear arms. You know, and there's a difference. The Second Amendment ends at where you start using firearms. And the legitimate purpose of government is to determine legal from illegal uses through representative government. You know, legal, target shooting, illegal, I don't know, carjacking. You know, I mean, these are pretty cut and dried lines. And the idea that they're taking a school massacre, a horrible, tragic incident, and then using that to destroy the rights of the law-abiding, they had to have wanted to do it anyway. And they're just using these massacres in these schools as an excuse to do it. Because, you know, it just seems to me that even if you had those tragedies, they didn't have to do all the taking away of rights that they do. So there's got to be some kind of thing that they're just waiting for a reason to do it or an excuse to do it. And like the Stoneman Douglas murders there was like the perfect excuse for what they wanted to do anyway. So the heart really isn't in the Second Amendment, whereas it should be, if they were being honest with us.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the most tragic things within our government is that those who are in power in our government have learned very well how to take a tragedy, to mold the narrative of that tragedy in a way that allows them to take liberty away from us, knowing that once they take the liberty away, it won't be coming back.
Well, I mean, not if I have something to do with it. Again, this is why I create Action Radio. So all you folks start sharing our show, sharing our bills. We have a lot of work to do.
I agree. So I agree with you, Greg, that it can be taken back. Mine was more a historical reflection that it typically is not taken back.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. Typically it's not. But then Action Radio is not a typical show. And the citizen legislator is not a typical reaction to government oppression. And I think that's where our strength lies. Shirley, welcome back. You want to get in on this?
Sure. I just had a couple questions because I know Representative Anthony Sabatini, he put some forward on the constitutional carry. But what can we do? How can we get this to the governor to get this passed? What's your ask for groups like DC Project or anyone else that's out there? Because we have 8 point some million concealed carry holders out there. So how do we get a hold of them, and what do you need us to do to move on with this?
Good question, Jim.
That's actually a great question, Shirley. I would expect nothing less from you.
These two know each other, by the way. Just if you're wondering, Shirley and Jim are friends. So yeah, go ahead. You two are bad. Go ahead.
So I would say that the biggest ask for us right now, Shirley, for members and supporters of the DC Project would be to reach out to Governor DeSantis. What we have found is right now the leadership in both the House and Senate in the Florida legislature are not going to allow pro-gun bills to be brought up in committee. They are, as we understand it, talking behind the scenes to legislators, warning them that if any chairman brings up one of these bills or anyone pushes really hard who has sponsored one to have one brought up, that the rest of their bills will not be heard in committee this session and they will get nothing done and have to face reelection without having any bills having passed.
Extortion. Extortion.
And I don't know that there's much that we can do to influence those leaders because those leaders have taken large chunks of money from Hoffman and Fernandez, and they're not going to go back against the hand that's feeding them, as it will. Governor DeSantis has a very large audience. He is wildly popular within Florida. And I think if he starts publicly calling on the legislature to act, that could put political pressure on them that could be greater than the pressure that the large donors are putting. And that's why we're calling on Governor DeSantis. I have no doubt that Governor DeSantis would sign a bill. Thus far, he has not been very open about calling on the legislature to pass a bill and send it to his desk. We are seeing governors in other states who are being open like that and are calling on their legislatures to do it. And it's our hope that DeSantis would do that. So I guess the ask is to reach out to Governor DeSantis and tell him that this is what Floridians want. They want him to take a stand and really support the Second Amendment.
Shirley, I think I got Pastor Don Green on the line too, so I'll get to him in just a second. Go ahead, Shirley.
Okay, I get that. How can they? The more I get into all this stuff, the more I go, what? How can you keep stuff from going to committee? What do we do there? Can we do anything there? And
so
also, another question is, these two big donors, is there any possibility we can convert them?
So we actually are working a little bit behind the scenes to at least try to convert one of the two.
Bring on the show. Sorry.
These are people who I don't think want to be brought out in public. They like to do everything behind the scenes. So that I think that would probably do more harm than good. But we are working a little bit on that. As for the bills and committees, the issue becomes there are always more bills that have been filed than there is time in the legislative session to have them all heard in committee. So committee chairs are responsible for deciding which bills are brought up and which bills are not. One of the other challenges we have right now is the head of both the House and Senate are hiding behind the fact that, for example, in the bill that Sabatini submitted that actually has been sent to committee, there was no companion bill in the Senate. So the House leadership and the chairman of the committee where that bill is sitting right now are able to hide behind the fact that there is no companion bill in the Senate. And because there's no companion bill in the Senate, they can claim there's no way that this bill will pass in the Senate because you couldn't get at least one senator to submit a bill that mirrors it. So there's no sense in wasting the committee's time and having it heard in committee.
Okay, thank you.
Well, just to add to what Jim's saying, there's what people don't, it's like Sun Tzu, you know, the battle's over before the war's over before the battle begins. In legislation, a lot of times it's the negotiations before the session even starts that determines what goes through. So these guys all meet. They meet, they do all the things they're probably not supposed to do as far as sunshine laws go. You know, this stuff's all decided and arranged. By the time you see a debate or by the time you see something on TV or by the time a vote's taken, it's already been long decided. And so the real impact is to get the bills into committee ahead of time, get them sort of – you almost have to have them pre-approved. And if the governor got behind one and wrote one – Jim, we have to write one for next year anyway. If they don't have one this year, we're going to write one for next year. And to find a way to make it very public. And, of course, that depends on how public we are and how many folks are supporting what we're doing here. But we could write a really good one. I'd love to have a constitutional amendment for Florida that takes away everything in Article 1, Section 8, which is where the firearms rights are in the Florida Constitution. Everything after the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. If you take out the next five sentences, it's actually not bad. You wouldn't even need open carry because there's no restriction on carry. There's none of that, you know, the legislature can prescribe or, you know, it says the right of the people to, correct me if I get the language wrong, but it says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. However, the legislature may prescribe the ways that you carry. So wait a minute, you just said you can't infringe and now you're saying you can't. So this is where rights become laws. And if a right has a law attached to it, it's not a right. Jim, does that make sense, everything I got so far?
Yes. Yeah, that was a pretty good paraphrase of what the Constitution says. But, you know, as we've mentioned before, Greg, the big challenge with putting forth a constitutional amendment like that is it is highly unlikely that any constitutional amendment related to firearms would reach the threshold of passing.
Yeah.
Problem that you run into is if you put forth a pro-gun constitutional amendment and it does not pass the constitutional amendment process, you give, you know, the perfect cover to anti-gun Republicans in the legislature to say, look, we tried to pass a constitutional amendment. It looks like Floridians don't want more gun laws, so let's not pass any.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're not ready for arguments on the Republic and the rights of the minority and, you know, that all the other kind of stuff we talk about. Let's get Pastor Don Green. He's out, I think, in Vegas near the SHOT Show. And so if you have a general topic, we might take up another time. But if you want to talk about what we're talking about now, Pastor Don, then feel free to join our discussion. Good morning, sir. How you been?
Good morning, Greg. How you doing? Good morning to the panel and everybody listening out there at Radio Land on the Internet. Good morning, good morning, good morning. It's the first Friday. Everybody's done with the holidays. Now it's time to get back to work.
Do you have a question? Do you have a gun discussion, or do you have like a general topic? Like I say, if you want to talk generally, you're welcome to call during one of the open hours.
I just want to say everybody's listening to the sound of my voice, and y'all know this is our year. Everything is opening back up, so take advantage of the opportunity when it presents itself.
Okay. That sounds good. All right, hang back for a bit then. Let me go to Chappie's on the line too, Donnie Chapman, who does our gun tech and competition report after Jim. Chappie, you want to get on this, on our Florida carry discussion?
No, I'm coming in on it, but yeah, I'll pipe in once I feel appropriate.
Let me get another paragraph, because Jim was talking about other governors doing this exact thing. And so the next paragraph of the open letter from Florida Carry to Governor DeSantis says, only days ago, Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia publicly endorsed constitutional carry. It's too late for Florida to regain the forefront on the right to keep and bear arms, but it is downright embarrassing that so-called Republican leadership has killed every effort to even keep up. 45 states permit open carry of firearms. I think it's 45 now? Wow. I didn't know it was that high. 45 states permit open carry of firearms, and 21 states enjoy constitutional carry. In other words, no permit, no license, no test. You just do it because it's your right. Okay. This is there simply is no valid reason for the citizens of Florida to be deprived of exercising the right to keep and bear arms as a true right. Do you think Florida would feel any pressure from other states, or are they more concerned with their donors? Jim.
No, I think they're more concerned with their donors. You know, the reason we're calling on Governor DeSantis is because of his popularity within the state and the fact that he, as the governor, he is the leader of the state of Florida. So I think the only way that we're going to get things moving, at least with the current leadership in the legislature, is if Governor DeSantis publicly calls on them to move forward. You know, I would also add that the governor of South Dakota has also come out publicly now during her State of the State address on Tuesday and called on lawmakers to eliminate all fees associated with concealed carry license in the state of South Dakota to move them towards a constitutional carry state as well. So we are definitely seeing it in other states. We are seeing other governors who are publicly calling on legislatures to do this. And we think that it's time for Governor DeSantis to do that.
Well, he has to encourage it. See, there's always the missing step. Like you said, he's talked about it. He says he would sign the bill, but he's not writing one, asking the legislature to include one, talking to specific legislatures that we know of, saying this is what, you know, I'd be happy to sign a bill if you guys would just, you know, pass one. He's like that missing step. Yeah.
To be fair to the governor cannot write a bill.
I know he can't write a bill, but he can ask others to – he can say this is what – he's always said this is what he wants, but he has to go forward a little bit further and actually
– Yeah, and if you look at this, the State of the State address that he gave, he did a very soft kind of hand wave towards having better – gun laws within the state of Florida, but it was one sentence. When he talked about election integrity, it was a couple of paragraphs. When he talked about the importance of the First Amendment protections in Florida, it was a couple of paragraphs. We would like for him to give the same level of attention to the Second Amendment as he's doing to other amendments.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, a little bit of background noise from one of your lines. We got four of you live right now. We got Jim, we got Shirley, we got Pastor Don Green, we got Chappie's on the line too. So if you have any noise in the background, we hear it. So I want to keep you all live so I can do that. Otherwise, I have to kind of find where it is. Jim, I know you've only got a few minutes left here. So where's the opposition to these donors? Florida Carey is probably not big enough to donate. Are these guys, I mean, how much are they donating? What are we talking about? Are we talking millions of dollars?
We are talking millions.
Okay,
yeah,
these are millions of dollars. These are big. Do they own major corporations that?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell me which ones? You know which ones?
I would have to look it up. I know they're both in South Florida. I knew it one time. I can't remember right now.
Okay. Would it be worth a little boycott, perhaps? Or are these companies too big? Or do you have other avenues to explore? Not as a director of Florida Carey. I want to make sure that I'm not talking about official policy here of you guys, because I want to keep that clear. But do you think there is some action that we could possibly take?
I remember correctly, I think that Fernandez may be in the healthcare arena. So boycotting, his hospitals or whatever it is that he does in healthcare is probably not going to be possible.
Yeah.
And I can't remember right now what Hoffman's business is.
Okay.
But I don't think either one of them are something like a CEO of, say, Dick's Sporting Goods, where you can just go out and say, hey, boycott Dick's Sporting Goods, go to all these other sporting goods stores.
Yeah.
I don't think that they're in those kinds of businesses, but I'd have to look. So I'll look that up and get back with you.
Yeah. Don't let Dick's be Dick's. I mean, we could have some great slogans with that. I'm sorry.
And
whoever named that store has got a problem. I mean, it's just too easy to make fun of it.
Well, and I'm sorry. Dick's Sporting Goods actually just had some information that they released at a shareholders meeting, I think it was, that said that their decision to remove firearms from their stores cost shareholders $250 million in revenue.
Wow. So there is economic effect of this, and it doesn't have to be organized. A lot of times people just get disgusted, and they just stop shopping in these places. And so that makes a big difference. So there's a lot of economic effect that you can have. It's like when Bank of America said, they were not going to get loans for firearms operators. Chappie can probably speak to this. A lot of people went to other banks. Lots of people went to other banks. And so out of necessity, but, the unintended consequences when these companies are stupid, they're going to lose money. We were talking about that with Derek earlier about, we had a fascinating discussion on solar panels, something like that. The government says conserve, buy solar panels. And then they turn around and let the utilities charge more for electricity, on your solar panel. So they defeat the purpose of getting one. So all this crazy stuff keeps going on. Anyway, Don's left us, but we got Chappie and Shirley. And Jim, do you have a couple minutes or do you have to go?
No, I'm going to have to run as well. So
let's get your contact info. Yeah,
I get tired of stealing all of Chappie's time anyway. So let's let him have his full 30 minutes. So
you're good.
You can find us at floridacarey.org. You can email directly to me, jim@floridacarey.org. Thanks again, Greg. I hope everyone has a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. And if any of your fellow directors or if the director in charge of the directors, wants to come on the show, we can talk about this, then I'd love to do it because we have other bills that you guys might want to sponsor as well, which are our Second Amendment, Enhancement Act, which has tax credits and tax deductions for, purchasing quality firearms and ammunition or access to quality firearms, as the liberals would say. So we got some pretty pro-gun bills they might want to take a look at, too. On that note.
That's great.
Thank you again.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, you take care. So this is what I love Fridays. We got Ellen, we got Shirley, we got Jim, we got Derek, and now Chappie. And so I don't have a theme for you yet, Chappie, and I don't have one for Shirley yet, but I will. Shirley and Chappie, do you guys know each other? Have you ever talked?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Shirley does DC Gun Project, and she's a firearms instructor. And Shirley, go ahead. Yeah, you're going to say something.
Oh, no. I was just listening. I'm just listening.
Okay.
I'm good.
Well, that sounds good. And Chappie is our gun competition tech expert. He's building – I got to get you to build me an AR-15. I'm going to talk to you about that because I don't have a
okay. –
well, something I've always wondered on those things, the gas tube. Do you ever clean that thing or does it just sit there and just keeps passing gas, for lack of a better term, and keeps the gun working? I've always wondered about that.
I clean it. I clean it with a brake cleaner.
Oh, okay.
Sprayed in
brake
there.
Yeah. Okay, good.
A brake cleaner. Brake cleaner.
That's different then. Okay. All right. Yeah. So what's going on? What's going on in Gun World? What's new? Are you going to the SHOT Show?
No, I got invited. I have a slot, but I didn't make it this year. But I will be going next year.
Okay.
No, because, you know, it's so up in the air this year if it was happening or not happening. So I didn't want to take a gander of getting a ticket and then be stuck in Vegas, which wouldn't be a bad thing.
Then you go to Ken Harrelson's pawn shop, and, you know, we'll all meet there. I want to go next year. I want to broadcast.
Yeah.
Shirley told me there's a media row. I want to broadcast a media row. This is Action Radio reporting live from the SHOT Show. That'd be great.
Oh, yeah. A lot of competitions going on next several months. So tomorrow, USPSA at Vinegar Bend in Citronelle, Alabama. And then also on Saturday, for those who want the Shoot Steel Challenge at Dothan Gun Range, Dothan Gun Club in Dothan, Alabama, which is like, we call that the Wimbledon of USPSA. Their range is absolutely beautiful. The bays are groomed grass that look like you're shooting on a golf course. It has the best drainage, so it rains. It's not flooding. You're not sopping. You know, your feet aren't getting wet. And actually, in March 11th and 12th, they are hosting the Alabama sectional for USPSA. So you're going to have a lot of the big pro shooters, such as Travis Tomasi, Max Michelle, who shoots for Sig Sauer. They will be there, and I will be sponsoring one of the stages. It'll be a stage match. So you can either shoot on the Friday or the Saturday. You're going to be giving away lots of prizes. For all those who are working as range safety officers, they're going to have a prize table just for those personnel volunteering. And then the big announcement is the 27th of April is the World Speed Shooting Championship, sponsored by Palmetto State Armory. That's going to be up in Talladega, another great range. And actually, one of our team Chappie shooters, Gatlin Johnson, will be shooting several firearms. And as of yesterday, he is number 4 in the world for PCCI, which is a pistol caliber carbine iron sights. So he's number 4 in the world now.
Oh, my God. That's great. Yeah, if you explain the acronyms, we want to do that for people. Yeah. Shirley, I think I heard you. Shirley, you want to get on this? What do you think?
Oh.
I thought I heard you in the background there. Did you have a comment or no?
No, I was muted. I didn't say anything. I was just listening to all the competitions and feeling nostalgic because I haven't sat in a long time. I haven't seen
you
in a while.
Get you back out there.
Well, yeah. I invite both you guys to come out. The 5th of February is our first USPSA match at Escambia River Gun Club in Catoma, hosted by the nonprofit we started, Escambia River Practical Shooters. So the 5th of February is our first match. Our second match, though, which every match will be the first Saturday of the month, but in March 5th, we are also going to have a raffle of stuff that we've received from a lot of our sponsors to help us purchase more steel targets and more equipment. So we have a bunch of sponsors. We have one of our sponsors, Strikeforce Energy Drink, which is also one of Greg's sponsors.
Yep. Play the ad. Have you heard my ad?
No. Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. I was going to play it real quick again. I played it once already, but yeah.
Oh, and then the big grand prize that we're raffling off, though, is a Mantis training shooting device that you hook up to the rail of your pistol. Basically, so it will sit there and give you feedback like, okay, you're jerking the trigger. You're pulling the trigger to the right. You're pulling the trigger to the left. You're anticipating. So it's a great training device for dry firing. You can also use it for live fire, but it gives you live feedback to an app on your phone. And it's amazing. It helps a lot. I have one.
That's hysterical. I want to try that when we, I'm working on the time is coming soon when I'll be out. And so you can definitely get me back in shape. I haven't shot for years, so I need to do that. I want to talk about this place, though, the Dothan, Alabama. You know, and as you're talking about, you said they're like golf courses. And, of course, immediately I thought of the Masters. you know, the golf tournament, and people, you know, people, golf, I mean, it's so exciting. People watch golf. I mean, actually, I don't know why, how, I don't know, you know, for when something really amazing happens in golf, but they really do. They watch, you know, golf tournaments on TV for hours and hours and hours. And I'm thinking to myself, if our shooting range is becoming more like golf courses in terms of sophistication, luxury, and it is a sport growing enough that you're going to have more televised events, and this is going to grow into something pretty cool. Because I think nothing's going to, you know, piss off the gun, you know, phobes more than, you know, this is ABC Saturday Sports with, you know, the, you know, whatever it is from Dothan, Alabama, the masters of shooting, you know, or something like that. I think that would be fabulous. Are things happening in that direction?
Look, it's starting to, it's just, it's so fast. So basically what they're doing right now, if you go, if there's like a major match, for instance, when they do the World Steel Shoot in, so you can go to USPSA.live and it will have live coverage of the event. It'll say what stage is going on. The only bad part, which they're talking about in USPSA, they also do the live coverage of a major match. It's just so fast, you know, when a shooter goes up there, it's, you know, they're done in 11 seconds. So they're going to kind of have to do it like golf where, okay, you know, so-and-so shooter is up on stage, so-and-so shoots them shooting, and then they could have like a little ticker at the end.
Oh, the commentators?
The scores, and then they, and then it'll go.
Well, Biff, what did you think of that round?
You know, kind
of
like what they do in golf, you know, how like, okay, well, he just, you know, shot on hole two, let's go to hole five or so-and-so. That's what they're going to have to do. And then they're still working a lot of technology where, of course, the live feed, which is okay right now, but they're trying to work kind of like, you know, in the NFL, they have those cameras that are like on strings. They've been working on that kind of project, working on, of course, the drones. But drones,
I was just going to say drones. You got to do drones can be above you and, you know, and so then they're out of the line of fire, of course. But because there's no person there and they're not that loud. I mean, you know, you're wearing a headset and earplugs, you know, you're not going to hear a drone, you know, whirring above your head. You're not going to worry about it anyway. Yeah, but drone photography has become amazing. And that'd be, you could actually follow people around the course. You could probably computer program these things to follow a course with a drone with a camera with predetermined angles at the various stations. You know, there's a lot of things that can be done with. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, and they're already doing sponsors, you know, like this, you know, say stage so-and-so sponsored by, and, you know, they'll put the little ticker on the bottom. So it's moving towards that direction as far as getting that way. In the 80s, they used to show it on USPSN every now and then, but the problem is the stage is so fast, you know, it's not like, okay, and then, but they can, you know, at the end of the stage, they'll usually do a quick little blurb with the competitor and say, how did you run that, you know, that round? Oh, it's pretty good. You know, I had some problems with this angle, you know, the second shot I had to shoot twice or something like that. So it's going that way. It's just, it's that way. But back to your other thing. Yeah. The gun course, as I call it. If people like to look it up, it's DothanGunClub.com. The owner Dan, who runs the place, he's put a lot of time and money into it. He's taken a lot of feedback from shooters. He's got a person that is probably one of the best around that is a match director, Drew Coleman. He makes some of the best and most challenging stages around. He's very knowledgeable in it. So, yeah, they put on a great match down there. And like I said, you go there, it's just absolutely a beautiful place. You know, you wouldn't think it's a range. The range is absolutely amazing. So, and it's
looks like a resort,
really
probably.
Laid out really well. Yeah, it's laid out really well. And they even have what's called the shoot house, which a lot of places are doing now, where it's kind of like a makeshift little building. And then they have walls that they can rearrange so they can change it up every week to have a shoot house, you know, how they want the stage and stuff in there. So it's pretty neat, you know, actually go into a shoot house and shoot a stage and stuff like that in there. It's loud, but it's really neat. So they
is it like a house clearing thing, like a law enforcement thing, or what are they doing in the shoot house?
Kind of, but it's more towards competition versus CQB, but it's kind of like that, you know. They'll start out typically on a timer, you know, start positions here. You have targets on the outside of the, in air quotes, the house, and you have to go in and they'll might be shooting out a window to another outside target. There's going to be inside targets. You go out another door to another set of outdoor targets. It's pretty neat. It's really neat. It's all covered. So that way then you're going from kind of low light situations where you're not going to use a flashlight, but it's going to change, you know, on the shadows and stuff like that. So your red dot's probably going to pick up more versus having the sunlight if you have a red dot on your pistol or if you're using fiber optics. So it's challenging, but it's really good. And like I said, they put a lot of time and money into that place. And that's why they're hosting the Alabama sectional in March, and it's going to be a great match.
Oh, this is going to be wonderful. I see the gun sports growing because of this. I was reminded of one of the Clint Eastwood films, and one of the Dirty Harry films, where he has a gun competition where the three police officers go rogue and form their own little, you know, death squad. But they're doing a competition, and these things popped up. These pictures popped up, good guys, bad guys, and I guess they could, you know, change them up as to what would happen. I could just see like a Wild West scenario where you go into this saloon, and these different targets pop out of nowhere, at a safe direction in front of you within like a, you know, 90-degree span or something like that, however you want to make sure to do it. But it'd be interesting to have like, you know, more realistic scenarios with gun competitions. This is going to get progressively more fun. So I have to get back into it. Pianki's on the line. He wants to talk to you. So Pianki, welcome to our show again today. We've had a fascinating show. You missed Alan at 6 in the morning. We were talking food again. Sorry.
Oh, I heard it.
Oh, you did hear it? Okay.
I heard it.
Alan from Belize, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I was going to ask your guests.
Sure.
What targets are they shooting at? Are they the silhouettes of humans?
No, for USPSA, they're called USPSA metric targets. They have what's shaped like a head box, and I guess the best way
if they silhouettes of humans, change them. Make them apples, oranges, like William Tell and so forth. Because what you got now, I believe, you got people that have been acclimated into having a difficult time shooting at something like that. So change your targets. Change
it's
your
worse
target
than that.
Not too bammy now.
Well, no,
but
go ahead, Chappie.
The only portion about that, we're sanctioned by the USPSA what type of targets we can and can't use. So for that would be fine during the outlaw match.
Well,
it's not sanctioned by
and
the
that's
USPSA
a special,
or IDPA.
Yeah, that's a special event that you got. But people go to gun ranges and you go to the gun store and they hand you out, even though they've changed the colors, but there's still a silhouette of a human. They need to change those to make something that is to a lot of people is more moral. So apples, for instance, I just use apples and I pull it out the sky.
Pianki, it's worse
if you get what I'm saying.
I get what you're saying, but the targets, they're actually beige background, and the human silhouette targets are black. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that could be ejecting them. They're not doing that anymore?
Actually, the black is a no-shoot. So
those are different targets. So, but if you look at maybe they don't do this thing, but these two in ranges where you'd have like a beige background and the target would be like a circle, so it'd be like black center target. It wasn't a black person. It was just it was an outline of a human silhouette, but the color they use. So it's just, you know, I mean, the people could object to these targets. People are objecting to these targets on a lot of reasons, not just their human silhouette.
I beg to differ because the FBI used to have the Roundup. And they did have silhouettes of black people that they were shooting at until somebody complained, even to the point where UPS wouldn't deliver. But I said, what I'm saying is that those target silhouettes that look like humans, I don't care what color, they might want to change. Just make them a bullseye.
I've been in competition for a few years, but I mean, Chappie's saying the same thing, that the targets that they use, they actually, they're cardboard. They don't have a shape of anything. Well, they sort of, you know, like I say, you've got a small square on top and you've got, you know, sort of a somewhat torso shaped thing. And then they have different, it's like perforated edges inside the box itself. And they get to smaller and smaller areas. And if you're really good, you know what I'm talking about, Chappie, right? So you have white targets, you got black targets.
Yeah,
black
targets,
like I say, no shoot.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good too. But some of the ranges I go to, you get a a sheet that looks like a safe like the human being. You put it on the rack and run it out there, whatever distance
you want. That's your range
and
problem.
People
that's
have
not,
a hard time shooting at that.
That's not a competition thing. That's a range. That's your ranges. I think a lot of ranges probably still have those. There are probably millions of them printed. Champion, you know, does USPS constantly, consciously change the targets to these little trapezoid-shaped, perforated edge things?
No, we're sanctioned by, it has to be approved target. Now, IFSC, which is the international version of USPSA, because typically in Europe and all that, they can't have targets, which the USPSA targets are considered, you know, a silhouette kind of a human. So their IFSC targets, we call them the turtle shell. They kind of look like this, basically a turtle shell shape, geometric shape.
Oh, those are the
shape.
Ones I'm thinking of. Okay, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you.
Which we can
use, but what I'm saying
USPSA
is,
well.
Hold on, Piaki.
People.
All right, go ahead.
No, which I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
For competition, we have to be thinking.
Yeah, it's not a problem
people
anymore, Piaki.
To the range.
Yeah.
People go in the range, and they have the choice of using something else.
Yeah, before a person walk out their front door, they go into the local range. It's a long road to get up to the point where you're going to be competing in competition shooting. But I'm saying a lot more people would be involved in shooting if they kind of sanitized the targets a little bit. I'm talking about the neighborhoods.
Piaki, I think it's already been done.
I don't think so, because the last ones I went to, they had the human shape. Get away with that human shape and put just a round bullseye like you do on the archery range, and you can still have, you know, the center and everything out to the peripheral edges. And I think you would people have to be worked up to the point where they feel comfortable. Open carrying, for instance. So just a suggestion.
Well, I definitely want that. I don't think that's like PSA. I don't think it's really a problem.
The bullseye target.
Chappie, go ahead. I'm sorry, Chappie, go ahead.
Yeah, the bullseye targets already happened because a lot of people can purchase your own. The shoot and see targets where you shoot and it kind of splatters and you can see it from a distance. A lot of people are using those, the round bullseye type versus and I know what you're talking about. Like when you typically go to the indoor range, they always have one of like looks like a terrorist and stuff like that. But a lot of places are going. Also offer, or you can buy your own targets that are the bullseye or the sheet of paper that has a bunch of bullseyes. So it's dependent, of course, on the firing range and the person buying it or providing their own target. So a lot of places are already doing the or offer the bullseye targets besides the silhouette. So
I was in this archery range in Oakland in the hills. And right by the place, the Chabot Observatory, and they had these wandering trails. But you feel like Robin Hood, and they had actually pictures of animals. You know, so you'd have your deer and your elk, and you're here with your bow and arrow, and so if you felt like you're really hunting. And then someone said, "Well, we don't have the animals," and so then they put space aliens. So it was really fun. We had these space alien targets. So it's pretty cool. So you can do anything you want with that. Do you do archery stuff at all, Chappie? Because we haven't really talked about that.
I haven't in a long time. Our range does have a little archery range. I haven't seen that many people out there. I think they're going to try to build it up and work it up a little bit more.
Yeah, good. We'll bring an archery person because I love it. It's fun. And the ammo is cheaper because you get to reuse your arrows.
Exactly.
You know, unless you lose them in the woods, which occasionally happens. Yes, anyway. Okay, so we got about 10 minutes left. Anything, any new gun tech stuff? Anything that you hear about that's going to be at the SHOT Show? You know, guns for big people, small people, easier wrecking slides, different calibers. Anything happening?
I heard Magpul, who is pretty popular making, magazines, the polymer magazines and other items for guns. I heard they're supposed to be debuting or announcing some new product that out at SHOT Show. That's a good thing about SHOT Show. You know, everybody's going to be showing their new and greatest thing that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I did see a thing, though. It's called Ghost Gunner 3. It's basically for everybody who wants, you know, to basically make their own fire. I wouldn't want to say ghost gun, but firearm of their own that they don't have to have a serial number because they're manufacturing. They can't sell it. They're making it for themselves. But before, you can make it on as an 80% gun. So 80% of it would be finished, and you'd have to finish the rest. Now they're coming out with the ghost gun 3 machine where it's a 0%, so it kind of bypasses Biden's law saying you can't sell 80% items in certain states. So now you're basically starting out with a block of aluminum and milling out your own receiver from scratch. So
too much trouble.
That's something that's coming out.
Too much trouble.
So,
much trouble for me.
So I already do that already now as a manufacturer. But
oh no, I gotta talk to you about my own AR-15. There's so many. We could do a whole half hour on AR-15s because there's so many variations, so many different ones out there. You know, carbine, target rifle, longer ones. I mean, it's like an industry unto itself. And especially since the gun phobes hate it so much, it's such a fascinating piece of technology. But I want to ask you one more thing before we go. We can talk about that too. But there's another one of these smart gun things coming up. This company that says, well, it's only by your fingerprint and. And to me, it just seems horribly unreliable. And the chances of it not working when it needs to are far greater than the chance of it, doing something it's not supposed to do because the owner or the operator didn't know their basic gun rules. Any feelings on the smart gun?
Nah, the only thing I'm worried about, I think, of a smart gun, because you said not working, is anything electronic or it's hackable. So,
oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about that.
It was to say that it's not just somebody can hack into it and then the gun goes off and you don't want it to go off and then it comes down back to you and then, they wipe all trace of it being hacked. So I think just stick to mechanics, the firearms. Let's not go into fuel injection like cars. Let's stick to the carburetor on a gun. So let's just.
Well, fuel injections are good.
Let's stick to the basic mechanics.
Thing.
Yeah,
well,
good
now, here's
thing.
The thing
but let's keep that out.
If they can be hacked, could the police, for example, hack all the smart guns in their jurisdiction, as a gun control measure?
Oh, yeah, exactly. The control. So they can disable, let's say there was an uprising, that we're finally going to take back this tyrannical government. Who's not to say
what,
that the government
if Action Radio fails? Is that
hack.
What you're saying?
But let's say, they can hack into it and then disable all the guns from all of us defending ourselves, just like probably what they're trying to do with these smart cars. They're trying to figure out where and when we're going. So, and that'd be another thing too. It'd probably track when you're going to the gun range and how often you're shooting. So I think it's just one more way of them trying to get data on us. So,
they have a GPS on our gun. It goes right to the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah.
Well, that's my concern, too. And this is why I want an older car. I want to get an old Firebird.
Yes.
Because I love 60s Firebirds. But one of the advantages of older cars is they don't have computers. They're not subject to EMP, electromagnetic pulse, nuclear things. They're not subject to a government machine that kills your electricity because it's got a battery, go with cables that runs to a distributor, which goes to a point.
Yeah, once it started, you're good to go. So EMP came, you're still driving while everybody else would be.
I'll be in the road my Firebird convertible, playing Action Radio on my radio very loudly and going, I'm happy. And I'm watching people, all the electric cars on the side of the road. Well, this is the thing too with electric cars. Those things I'm sure can be hacked and turned off. If they can be turned on, they turned off. This is off the subject, but we got a few minutes here. California, we were talking about this earlier with electricity and guaranteed income. California, they force everybody to get electric cars, and then their public utility says, well, you can't charge it when it's hot. You can't drive it in the summertime because everybody's using too much air conditioning. So the government intrusion comes on all different levels. So I never thought about that, but if the government can hack your smart gun, if they can take away your air conditioning, because you're using too much power, they can take away your car because the cars are electric as opposed to gasoline where you just buy it and go where you want it, and they can take away your gun. It's like all the it's the same. It just never changes. Anything that has anything to do with freedom, they want to take away.
One more step towards social. And then the one thing I have against the whole smart car, but like, oh, I'm saving this much on gas. Well, it's different colors of money. You're saving your pot of money for gas, but now your pot of money for electricity just went up.
Yeah.
It doesn't really balance itself out. I mean, it probably does a little bit, but I don't know. And then the time and effort, because you see everybody at these electric charges, they're out there for a couple hours charging up their phone or their car. So,
Well, where do they think the power comes from? It comes from coal, oil, natural gas, or uranium. I mean, those are nuclear. Those are your options for generating electricity right now. except for those. I mean, solar and wind do some, but it still comes down to, you know, petroleum and uranium are driving our energy.
And that's why I'm with you. Just give me something, some good old Detroit muscle. And
yeah. Well, do you find that a lot of gun owners tend to buy classic cars? I bet you that goes hand in hand.
Well, a little bit, yeah. I mean, you pull up to the range. I see a lot of, like, classic trucks, old trucks. I see some people drive to the range. So, not that it's funny, but it is sometimes funny when you do see somebody roll up to a match with a Tesla.
Well, which raises the other question. We only have a minute left, but gun ranges and competitions are non-political, but obviously there's more conservative, you know, gun-believing people, you know, Second Rights Amendment people there. Do you have like a liberal contingent of gun competitors? I mean, there's got to be. Are there like liberal gun clubs?
I haven't seen it. No. Typically, what I like about there, it's like everybody's like-minded. I don't like to use the word safe space, but you are in a group of people who are, no matter what their background as far as career or economic background, everybody has the same mentality. Everybody wants freedom. They enjoy firearms. They enjoy competing. Everybody's well, you know, everybody's not so, I guess, easily hurt, you know, or easily offended.
Offended, you know, the word du jour. Yeah. Okay.
You know, you have people, I like Glock, I like Sig, and they just go on with it, but not how some of these other leftists, you know, well, if you don't like my way, it's my way or the highway, and they throw a fit. You know, everybody just kind of razzles each other up a little bit, and then they just get along and just, you know, they be adults. They're adults.
If political correctness, race theory ever hit guns, well, those are black guns. We want, we need some, more diversity. This could get really
silly. Some purple guns out there, yeah.
Yeah. Fortunately, it's a refuge. The beauty of shooting and flying, and I play in a rock and roll band, it's a refuge away, because I do politics all week long, we'll do, especially if you're in the gun movement. But it's nice just to get up to the range and shoot and have fun and just get away from it and get in your zone. We got to go, Chappie. So why don't you give your information where people can find you, any new products that you come out with, and that'll be it for this week.
Yeah, I can be found on Facebook.com/ChappieTactical or on Instagram @ChappieTactical. And one of the current things I'm working on right now is I'm developing my own brand of AR-15 lowers. And I'm also developing a 2011 race gun that I will be putting out here shortly.
Okay, I want details on that because, the AR-15 kind of strikes my interest too. Yeah, so maybe I'll be the first one to try one out. I'll give you a range review report. All right, sir, thank you. Thanks to everybody that called in today, everybody that called in twice, like Shirley and everything else. I'm sorry, Chappie, I stepped in there for a bit there, but yeah. We'll do it again next week. Okay.
All right, have a great weekend.
You too, thank you. Good luck on the competitions. Greg Pangloss for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, our legislative website, writeyourlaws.com, W-R-I-T-E, writeyourlaws.com. If you want to contribute to Action Radio, paypal.me/actionradio. And, Chris, if you want to advertise on the show, just contact me at greg@writeyourlaws.com, and we'll do it all again Monday.